a road. And that road may or may not lead you in a good direction. But you're going to stay on that fucking road if you're attached to an ideology. And it could be a terrible road. It could be a road of, you know, circumcising your daughter's clitoris because that's a fucking tradition. I mean, these fucking crazy bitches in Africa that cut holes in their lip and stretch them out to put plates on. Why is that? Because they got on a fucking road and they stuck with that road, regardless of rational thinking. They didn't use rational thinking at all. They just adapted a predetermined pattern of behavior that makes life so much more simple. And that's what every fucking religion is. The problem is no one knows. You cannot know. You can have your own beautiful personal experiences. You can have been the person that was actually touched by God. But when you start yelling and ranting that other people have to follow
you, Brian, you got two things going on at the same time.
Christians going to be taken away. I know you're full of shit. I know you're full of shit, and you know you're full of shit. And the real problem is we can't say it because everybody's got this freedom of religion, religious freedom, the freedom to express yourself. Even if you're expressing yourself with nonsense that helps scared, lonely, sad people lock onto that nonsense so they feel like they're a part of something. I mean, that's what it is. It preys on people whose lives fucking suck. So it's all nuts. It's not like your shit's cool and my shit's not. And it's not that, you know, yoga's the answer or fucking mushrooms are the answer. There's just questions. And until we're honest about that, we're never going to evolve. The human race is stuck in a giant quagmire when it comes to our behavior and our thinking about our behavior. But there comes a certain point in time where you have to pop the training wheels off. And you have to recognize that all this morality that you've developed is good because it's good to treat other people good. It's good to treat other people the way you'd like to be treated yourself. It's like a fucking golden rule, and there's a reason for it. And that reason is that we're connected in some strange way that we don't totally understand. Unless you are good to other people around you, unless you're kind and friendly and warm and loving, you're not going to fucking enjoy this life. You're just not. You're going to be problems everywhere you go. You're going to have problems everywhere you go. You got to figure out a way to enjoy this fucking life. It's not because of Jesus. It's not because of Moses. It's not because of anybody that may or may not have ever existed. It's because that's how you fit in better in the world. That's how you stay positive. And it doesn't have to be some shit that was written 5,000 years ago on fucking animal skins. That doesn't have to be the golden rule because it's old. You know, that's dumb. We need to figure out, like, now, today, what is, you know, the best way to live your life? What is the, you know, there's got to be ways you can be putting forth the most positive energy. I mean, we know objectively what's causing pollution. We know objectively what's causing birth defects and, you know, and we're taking in too much chemicals and not enough vitamins. We know objectively all this stuff. We know how to organize our world, and yet we don't do it. We know how to organize our health, and yet very few people do it. We know all these things. The right path to, like, being, like, a happy, healthy person is to do all the shit that we already know you're supposed to do. Take care of your body. Take care of your health. Take care of your mind, your stress. Meditate, be kind to people. We all know that. I mean, you ask anybody, they know how to get by and to be the most evolved version of you that you can be. I mean, it's not like a magical checklist. If you talk to people about it, you said, okay, here you got a person, you want to improve them. What are the things that you're going to do to them? Okay, well, if I was a life coach, the first thing I would say is this guy's got to get on a diet that makes him healthy. I don't need a diet just to lose weight. I mean, just healthy foods in your body, many vegetables. Vegetables, a lot of good quality protein, a lot of water, stop the sodas, stop the bullshit. Start working out your body and get a better sense of, like, how this machine feels when it's moving, it's flowing better, there's less tension in it, your mind feels, like, relaxed, and you enjoy every single moment of the day better. Step one. Everybody knows that step, right? What's step two? Be cool to people. Be nice to as many people as you can. Smile at as many people as you can. Have them smile back at you. Tip well when you go to restaurants. Just do the most you can. Be as nice as you can, you know, and just still manage to not have people walk over. Just get through this life as nice as you can. What else? Do what you want to do with your life, right? Don't go be doing something you don't enjoy. Don't get locked into, you know, a car that you can't afford and doing something crazy because you need the money. Don't do that. Do what you want to do. Do what the fuck is it that you really want to do? Because if someone else is doing it, you can do it, you know? I mean, everybody makes their own path through this world, but a lot of people don't follow the path that they really fucking feel pulled to. You know, just for whatever reason, they got negative programming. You know, when they were kids, someone told them they couldn't do it, or told them to take the shortcut, or take the short route. That's a sad thing.
That was a little long.
A lot of wisdom.
Very cool, though.
It was cool. It's cool that someone did that. Whoever did that, thank you very much. Yeah, what is his name?
Unknown name or no name? Or
well, I should find out, right? Well, I can't because my cunt sucking website is down.
Cunt sucking.
Don't you hate that? There's no reason for
so
that.
It's so annoying. My website's down a lot.
There really is no reason for that. So
I refer to my website as cunt crazy.
Yeah, this fucking thing's annoying as shit. I don't know what's happening. Perhaps it's a DOS attack, Brian. Perhaps we're being attacked by hackers. Thank you very much for tuning into the podcast. I'm sorry we're late, but, you know, shit happens. We're not very good at starting these things on time. That's the beautiful thing about the internet is you don't really have to start everything on time.
Yeah.
Do we have an echo going on in the background?
Seems like we do, don't we?
Go see if that shit is on. I think it is. I can't get this right. I swear to God, we try every week. That's why you're supposed to have, like, engineers. But if you had an engineer here, what if he was a weirdo? You see the big circular thing, Brian? Do you see it?
Yeah, I just
you kill
off
it? No, you didn't. Oh, see that big circular thing? Touch it, and it shuts off.
Yeah, I just also want to kill the stream so you get more internet.
Okay. Did you do that?
Yeah, that middle star button?
Yes. No.
Yeah.
No. No, no, it's a fuck. Just shut it off, dude. Shut the computer off.
It makes it red when it's off, right?
Yes. There we go.
God.
What kind of a show is this? We have to listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. What have I subjected you to?
It's the best shows, though. Sometimes.
I apologize.
It's the best shows sometimes.
The best shows are always that we're... What the fuck? We're just justifying the fact that we're completely unprofessional. This show, as all, are sponsored by the Fleshlight, ladies and gentlemen. If you have not fucked one, you do not know what you're missing. I think that's an official slogan now.
Keep it away from teething dogs.
Outstanding masturbation device, Mr. Callen. I suggest you use one. I actually have one for you.
I appreciate that. I hope you have one for me.
I got one that I saved especially for you.
Thank you.
It's you dress it up as a beer can, apparently.
Nice. Or as a pussy.
Here, see? It looks like a can.
Oh, it's hilarious.
So, like, if you're a closet pervert. See, because if you got this out,
yeah,
you got to
like,
do some explaining.
Wait a minute.
You got to do some explaining.
Wait, let me see that.
It's worth more if you don't take off the plastic, though.
Why is that?
Because it's, like, more of a collector's item, you know?
What the fuck are you talking about? This ain't a baseball card, dude. It's a fake pussy.
What makes you think I'm not going to use it?
He's collecting fake pussies.
That is the craziest thing. That might be the craziest thing you've ever said.
I listened to him. I listened to him, too. I shouldn't open it.
Could be a collector's item.
Is that rookie year natural light?
You snapped me out of it.
Hey, what is it about people that are into, like, collecting old shit like that and keeping it in the wrapper? This is the exact way it was made.
I used to do that with comic books.
Like old cars?
It's such a
dude, cars go for a fuckload of money. Like old, like Corvette, like original Corvette.
So some stamps.
And they want original. Everybody wants original radio. They want original steering wheel. All the stuff that sucked. They want all that stuff.
I know. I think it's a feeling of nostalgia. It's like you get to touch what was, you know, alive back then or what was so cool. It kind of brings them back to other memories or something.
It's very strange. Just the need.
I've never been
for...
a collector, man. Collectors always kind of remind me of people that do other weird stuff. It's a form of, it's a fetish.
Not even comic books?
When you collect your it's a fetish. Now, it could be stamps, but it could also be like fingers. You know what I mean?
Right. But have you ever done comic books? Didn't you used to do comic books?
Yes,
really.
I used to do comic books.
I used
books.
To read them, but I never collected
It was one of my saddest moments of poverty when I was living in Boston, and I was totally broke. I sold all my comic books.
Did the exact same thing for rent money?
Dude, mine it didn't even barely cover my rent. It was boxes and boxes of comic books. I mean, they totally fuck you on the money. Like, they're worth way more than they pay you for. But you got to do what you got to do.
I had like 300 issues of just The Amazing Spider-Man, and I had every single McFarlane. I had like 10 of Todd McFarlane. First time he did Spider-Man. And
I had weird comic book taste. Like I liked Conan. I liked,
yes.
I just because yes. He was a real person.
Dude, I used to read his real books.
So did I. Read everything.
Robert E. Howard.
Had
yeah,
ever.
That's what I'm talking about.
Frank Frazetta did all.
Oh,
the, all the,
fuck,
dude,
those were
I
the
read
best.
Every single book he ever wrote.
Yeah.
And then he killed himself with 30.
Yeah.
Man.
He was a young
he
guy.
He killed himself.
Yeah. He's 30 years old.
Oh wow.
That's so awesome that you're into Robert E. Howard.
Oh my God,
dude.
He's actually a great writer. I don't
he was
care
a
what anybody
very
says.
Good writer. That kind of fantasy writing, he was the best at it. He created a whole world.
It would
man.
Always. He,
those
oh,
are
the
good
books.
Books.
Oh my God, the books would start with this epic battle.
Yeah.
And this giant Sumerian,
yeah.
this guy with this volcanic blue eyes,
yeah.
and then finally some survivor would turn and say, "Who are you?" And he would say, "I am Conan." And I'd be like, "Ah!"
Dude,
the heartbreak is I didn't grow up to look like him. That was the heartbreak.
Oh, yeah, it was very sad. You set yourself up to such a golden standard.
That's dramatic for a kid.
Conan? Yeah, it
is. That's a boy's first heartbreak. It crushes you. Is to realize I'm never going to be a superhero, man. I'm
never going to be a guy who kills dragons with a sword.
Right. I don't even get to carry a sword. They're illegal.
Demons and shit.
I can't carry a sword.
Dude, if they could make the Conan books into a real movie, like with a really smart director, like instead of like the Conan, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, was pretty cool.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool. It wasn't bad, man. But it was so 80s. You know what I'm saying?
You got a movie that was done, like, based, like
the Hobbit, you know? Get, like, Peter Jackson to do it or something. Uh-huh. Get him to really invest in Conan. What was Conan was like this freak warrior that
always.
Just.
And it was always an epic. It was always. He was always.
Oh, there were awesome stories.
A journey, and he always learned something at the end of the book, which was that, you know, steel makes right.
Isn't it fascinating, man, that dude who wrote it, Robert E. Howard, was just completely depressed.
Yeah. Killed just himself in fucking, his car. I believe shot himself in his car at 30.
Just fucking couldn't take it. Just wanted off the planet. Mm-hmm. Wanted off. This guy was like, for that genre, one of the best writers ever. Really fun stuff, man. Yeah. Really cool stuff to read. I loved that shit when I was a kid.
But he lived in that fantasy world, and I guess, you know.
Did Conan fuck Red Sonja? Was that like.
I'm sure he fucked
everything.
Were they
in the same world?
If he met her, he fucked her. For
correct.
Sure.
Correct.
100%.
Of course he did.
If he met her, she just jumped on his dick like it was a grenade. And she was
immediately.
She was a brave soldier.
Yeah.
Listen, man, that's Conan.
It's
Conan was the king of the world.
Yeah.
He's like the baddest motherfucker ever. That was the best thing about the Conan series.
Yeah.
Like, you knew no matter what, just settle down, son. Yeah. Conan got it. He got this.
What was the worst part of their Conan series? What was the part of Conan that you hated, though?
I didn't hate it.
Was there a part?
Nothing.
Was there a guy?
How about nothing?
Perfectly written.
You know,
really?
He used to pray to Crom, which was this god Crom. Who lived in the center of the earth. And you know what he used to ask Crom? Because you couldn't ask Crom. You couldn't ask Crom
for forgiveness.
Too many, because he was a restless god.
Yeah.
The only thing he ever asked Crom of was a fighting chance. Hmm. He just wanted a chance. They just give me a sliver of a chance.
To die well.
Yeah, I want to die well.
Yeah.
That's what every man.
Woo,
son,
to be brave in the face of fucking evil monsters and demons and shit. Yeah,
every man's fantasy is to be a hero. Every man's fear is that he's a coward.
He got it all locked up, man. He had it all locked up in his brain. You know, his depressed brain. He created this intense fucking fantasy world.
And because in a way, what he was talking about is somewhat timeless, you know?
It's almost like just energy. Like he found a path for it. You know, all the depression for whatever was fucked up in his life, he figured out a way to divert it in this other direction, this huge, fantastical world, you know?
Right.
This fantastic world of fucking monsters and witchcraft and sword battles and this fucking gigantic, brawny, tan, bronze-skinned man.
Yeah,
just slaughtering people.
Yeah, he used to call it cutting a path of crimson, cutting a crimson path.
Yeah, I mean,
he used morning stars and.
Yeah, he had to have to survive in the fucking woods by eating pigeons, throwing rocks at them, and eating them raw and shit.
Yeah,
dude, some of those stories were awesome.
Yeah, I just go to the supermarket. Damn it,
those stories
Whole
are
Foods
fucking
to be exact.
Awesome. Those stories were the shit.
They really were.
When I was a kid, I used to do magic tricks. I had a little magic show in Fisherman's Wharf, and I would do it so I'd get money for comic books. I'd do put on a show. I was like 8 years old.
I used to put on a wig and do some light dancing.
I saw all these street performers in San Francisco, and I got a box, like a magic box, you know, like for Christmas.
Right.
It's like, you know, a bunch of card tricks and a bunch of shit in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought the box with me, and I said, I don't know what I'll do. I'll get a cape. I'll put a hat on. I'll look cute. Like, I was aware I would look cute. I was like 8. You know, it's like a little 8-year-old criminal.
That's great. A hustler.
Yeah. And so that's how I first started performing.
Really?
For comic books. Because I was addicted to comic books.
What kind of magic would you do?
It was terrible. It was the only thing. You know, it was cute because I was 8. And I was by myself. Until some
here's a question.
Older kids
if
bullied
you,
me and
if
I got
you
scared.
Could be, if I could give you one magical quality, one, what would it be?
What is this, a date?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Is this a ridiculous date with a contrived dude?
I think obviously it would be flying.
Is this a date?
I thought you were going to give me like a profound answer, and you're like, is this a date with a guy
who pretends to be a palm reader? Is this a date with a guy who believes
give
in crystals?
What happened when you were 6?
A guy who believes in crystals?
I'm a healer. And
if you could have one superpower.
There's one thing.
What would it be?
What
would it be? I don't know, man. If I really could think about it.
I want to look like one of those myostatin cows.
At first, I want to say flying, but I'm so afraid of heights. I feel like I would only like fly like 5 feet above this sky.
You wouldn't fly. It wouldn't matter. You'd get, I'd get somewhere, I guess, 15 minutes early. Is there really that many places to really be? Not really. And you wouldn't fly. Yeah. It'd be all sweaty.
It just seems cool. But
you get hit in the head with birds and bugs.
It's hard to take magic power serious after you've had a real good mushroom trip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Magic powers, like DMT, is way crazier than any fucking magic trick anybody could ever do.
What if I said to you, you could see 5 minutes into the future for every time you were kind of on a 5 minute delay?
Yeah, that'd be great and everything, but then you'd be this douchebag who just knew about everything. Yeah, and everybody and else. It's like you try to tell people, and they're like, "How do you know? How come I don't know?" People would hate on you. Believe me, man. The last thing you'd want to know is the future.
What if
you'd like, "Why did you tell me I was gonna die? You know, my father could have been saved if you told us not to get on the train, Dad."
Yeah, but you, what if you could change the future as a result?
Fuck, we're going to change everything, man? And what are you going to do? You're going to keep people alive forever?
You lose adventure.
Well, not only that, the reality is this is a temporary experience. We know it. It's on paper. Mm-hmm. It's been proven. It's documented.
I really liked what you were saying about in that thing we just listened to about how people know, they really do know the answers of how to take care of themselves. Yeah. It's getting out of their own way. And it's always it brings me back to like what I always talk about when you have like Mayor Bloomberg who wants to outlaw trans fats in food when Washington or any government agency wants to legislate good health, whether it's making drugs.
You're going
to
make people dumber.
Like that. Well, it's you're not going to make people healthier. People know the answer. There are a lot of really smart people that smoke cigarettes.
Protect
a lot of
people
food,
from shit,
you know?
Yeah.
But they're doing it. It doesn't mean they don't know it's bad for them. There's a whole nother question. It's why don't people dare to be the best they can be? Why? Is it because it takes effort, or is it more of a courage issue? Are you afraid of what you might find or not find as a result? You know, that's really the question.
Yeah, there's a lot of distractions going on with us. You know, people sabotage themselves all the time.
I see it all the time.
Yeah, you create all sorts of bad habits so you don't have to deal with your own bullshit. You know, but I'm all for personal choice, man. I think it's very important that we encourage personal choice.
Absolutely.
You appreciate it much more if you earn it. You know, I'm writing this book, and one of the things that I wrote about this book, that the only thing I'm really proud of anything that I've ever done in my life, is my peace of mind. Like, that I know that I worked on. That I know that I got there because I grew up in a very fucked up, turmoil-filled life, and I figured out a way to navigate it to become a happy person. It's like one of the only things that I'm proud of.
Yeah, I think that knowing you for as long as I've known you, which is going on 16 years, I think that's a huge – I absolutely see that transformation. Because you used to be so intense, and you used to look at the world as just full of barbs and thorns, you know, and you were always on the defensive, always ready. Because I remember we'd be hanging out, and somebody would say something stupid, which you always run into, and you just – it was so hard for you to deal. You just immediately call them out on their ridiculous – like 2 + 2 = 15. 15 and unicorns live in my backyard. And I'd go, "That's great." And you'd go, "Bullshit! I don't like this person." And I'd be like, what do I do with this uncomfortable confrontation?
Used to hang out with some knuckleheads, though, in all fairness.
I really did.
In all fairness.
I really
you
did.
You were hanging out with some crazy people.
True.
And I am not that way with reasonable, rational people. But when I'm there with meth heads, and I know someone's a meth head, and I'm like, something's wrong here.
I smell
something. Stop. This is not normal conversation we're having here. We got an issue. We're not going to deal with how crazy this bitch is.
Like, and I'd be like, I can't see
out,
anything.
We would be out with one of Brian's friends, and it would occur to me like 5 minutes into the conversation, okay, this is like a crazed fucking half homeless criminal we're hanging out with. And I'm like, okay, we have to deal with this.
Nah, everything's good. Nah, she's cool. She's cool. Yeah, he's like, she's just a little nervous today.
She gets weird around people. Yeah, you're an intense guy. She gets weird around you.
She's starstruck.
She's doing meth. Fucking mind, bro. I'm like, there's a monster disconnect here with this chick.
Meanwhile, I really did find meth in her purse.
Yeah, of course you did.
And meanwhile, she ruined my life.
Yeah, it was a wreck.
Good job, bro.
I tried to talk him out of it.
Nah.
Do you remember?
When I was younger, I'd be like, oh, that girl comes from a nice family. I'll take the girl with the bat tattooed on her face and the track marks, please.
This is how crazy this girl was. This is how crazy this was. It was Brian and I met her at a bar, and he told me, "I want you to meet this girl I've been seeing. She's really cool." So I go and I meet him at the bar. I talk to her for three or four seconds. She turns and walks away, and I looked at him, and I go, "She's fucking crazy.
I go, that girl's crazy. I go, let's get out of here right now. I go, get the fuck out of here. I go, you need to just change your number, shut your fucking phone off, let's go. Let's get out of here. It's like, nah, she's fine.
She's cool. Fine. No, she's not going to stick around.
You know how you have a friend who you love to death, but for some reason, like, he doesn't have those John Carpenter glasses? From the thing, he can't fucking see it. Everybody else can see that this bitch is crazy. He could not see it.
Yeah.
He just chose
not to see it.
Well, you didn't just choose not to see it. You would glaze over and become like
a project.
I'm locked into this.
This is a project for me.
I'm working with her. I'm trying to help her.
I want to change her.
And I was like crazy survival boy. I was like, we got to get out of here.
Yeah, you were always right. Because I would have saved a lot of effort and time.
You're a healer, Brian.
I don't have healer instincts. I have runaway from monster instincts.
Yeah, but healer instincts are a phony too, because what I was trying to do was just, I just wanted a project where it was like I was the guy of the savior. Yes. It was more very selfish arrangement.
Don't blame yourself. I mean, you're being critical by saying it was selfish, but it's just a faction of all of these things, all these crazy behaviors are just from our childhood. That's all it is.
Yeah, I think you're right.
That's what it is. I mean, you did not like the way you were raised, and you were trying to literally raise a chick. Right. You were trying to literally guide them. I mean, and fuck them.
Yeah, and fuck them. I mean, that's important. That's part of the guidance.
A huge part.
It's part of the guidance, though.
It's part of the power.
You have to lie down on your stomach and
it's part of the connection
arch your back.
The universe.
Yeah.
Such a...
And fuck them.
And fuck them. What a crazy fucking...
It occurred to me. Remember when I told you this? It occurred to me that the girls I was dating in L.A., I was like, I looked at like their last four relationships and I was like, wow, all four relationships, all of those girls for me, they were all essentially a high tech pet. they were not people. They were high tech pets. Dude. I had to feed them. I had to be nice to them and pet them. I had to talk to them like a little cuties, and then I had to fuck them. And who hasn't thrown a wig on the dog? But, you know, the point is,
it's all about hacking them, though.
Oh my god, that's so true.
Yeah,
it's so true.
It was weird.
Brian is his current woman aside, she's very nice, and he's had a few in the past that were very nice. It's not all of them, mm-hmm. You know. Patty Jenkins is one of the coolest humans on the planet,
no doubt.
But Brian has like been the smartest guy that I know that has dated the dumbest chicks. I mean, just straight.
Not just dumb, crazy.
Straight,
though.
just
how about how about my girl? My girl, Diane, this girl who will
don't
remain,
say any names.
I know. My girl, Tina, who lived with me. And she thought, she didn't know who Freud was. She didn't know who Freud was. She was 30. And then she thought, and she was, this was an actress. She thought that Shakespeare lived in biblical times. I was like, hey, you're already in my house. How do I go through this eviction? It took a year.
Oh, my God.
See if I can procrastinate the ending of this relationship for the next 2 years.
Wow. Well, you know what? There's nothing wrong with not knowing something.
Well, yeah. You just get older, though, and you
it
start
seems
learning.
Like you should know that.
The main thing is to get older and learn. Yeah. Learn from your mistakes and not make the same ones.
But, you know, the problem is a lot of people get programmed a certain way as they're growing up, and it's very hard to shake off their programming. Sometimes better to have no programming, as I think you did and I did, mm-hmm. where you just kind of were left alone to figure out life by yourself. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think that's better than having shitty programming. Because if a girl grows up with shitty programming where there's a lot of dumb people around her all the time offering their dumb thoughts and she's with dumb people all day instead of being left alone.
Yeah, I think the reason that I didn't grow up that way necessarily is I lived in so many different countries. I was always literally moved. I thought about it by the time this is the truth. I didn't live anywhere for the first 30 years of my life. Actually 33 years of my life. I didn't live in one place for more than a year and a half. I literally had moved every year to year and a half, and a lot of times it was a totally different culture, continent. But I think that didn't allow me to get pigeonholed or be. I was exposed to so many different cultures and ideas that you have to kind of keep reshifting and adjusting your paradigm. Because what you think is a preconceived notion, for example, you know, you get this idea of what a lot of people say. Well, that's my idea of what an Arab is. That's my idea of what a Jew is. That's my idea of whatever it is. When you're exposed constantly to different people in totally different settings, what you really actually learn to do as a child is empathize with those people. Because you start to realize, yeah, they're different, but they're exactly the same.
Did you find yourself being a chameleon and blending into the new environment?
My dad used to say, my father said to me when I was 15, he said, I've never seen anyone ever be a bigger chameleon. He said, your ability to ingratiate yourself and find your way into any situation, find a hole in any situation. He said, I remember him his first comment he ever gave me. He never gave me a comment. He said, it's remarkable. He goes, I've never seen anything like it in my life. He saw me like I was in Switzerland or something, and I just had no friends and everything.
I was a chameleon. We moved from New Jersey to San Francisco to Florida to Boston.
Yeah. And that's why your accents, by the way, a lot of people don't know one thing about you. Your accents are as good as anybody's. And that's probably because you developed an ear.
Well, I learned rhythm about and my pacing. Own. I won the Bay State Games Taekwondo tournament, and they put me on television. It was the first time I was on television.
Oh, wow.
And I was 19. And I heard myself on TV. I was talking about my instructor, Mr. Mike O'Malley. And I was saying, me and Mr. O'Malley, we've been working out really hard. And I heard my accent. I was like, that is the grossest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life. I had like a fake Boston accent. I mean, I had a Boston accent.
But yeah,
I was disappointed in myself that I picked it up that quickly. I'd only lived in Boston for like 3 years, and all of a sudden I had this crazy accent.
Well, but that comes, I think, from having an ear for the music of
actually,
any situation.
It was 6 years by then. Years by then that I'd be in Boston. But 6 years and I developed like a hard. I'm sure. Saying hard.
Sure.
That's ridiculous.
Sure. We're social animals, though, too, you know?
So I dropped it. I learned and I dropped it. But hearing myself on TV made me like consider my accent, like how ridiculous it was. Right. I was like affecting an accent to fit in.
Does it ever come out of the blue though? Like, are you?
Well, there's some Boston for sure. I mean, I lived in Boston. Boston's where I grew up. If you know, you talk about my formative years. My formative years are 13 to 24. Mm. I lived in Boston. You know,
oh, really?
13 to 23, okay. Something like that.
That's a long time.
So that's 10 years. That's growing up. That's my. I mean. If I think about a hometown, Boston's definitely
Boston's
my hometown.
A rough town, by the way, isn't it?
This is fucking good. We just had the UFC in Boston. There was no less than like 11 bench-clearing brawls in the fucking stands. I mean like full-on soccer kicks, pride style. There's stories on the internet of people getting their fucking heads stomped, and there's all kinds of crazy stories.
Really?
They're nuts.
So this was at the UFC in the stands?
Dude, Boston is filled with savages.
Yeah, it's true. It's
they're
true.
Savages.
They're amazing.
I've never lived in a place where people were so quick to scrap.
It's why I love a lot of good comics come out of Boston, though, because to be able to deal with those crowds, those cynical crowds, and navigate your way through that.
Yeah, we've talked about it on this show many, many times with other Boston guys like Bill Burr and Dane Cook, and it's the place where, you know, it's like the proving ground for comedy. There were so many good comics that came out of there.
So
that's
many.
One of the reasons. Like, you had to be so on your toes to make those guys laugh. And if they turned on you, it was over.
Yeah.
If you know, if a Boston crowd turns on you and starts booing, there's no rational thinking involved. Like if you go on stage with a fucking Yankee shirt on, they're just gonna start throwing shit at you. Like, we're not gonna talk about this. Hey, come on, guys. I like New York, you like Boston, what's the big deal? Fuck you, queer. They'll fucking throw glasses at you. They don't give a shit. They'll all together decide to beat the fuck out of you. It won't be like one guy does it and the other people go, hey, we shouldn't do this. No, they'd all go, yeah, get him.
The way a school of the fish knows to turn, like,
yeah,
you know.
Dude, they'll break your window. If you're driving by with a New York license plate in your car, like, they're fucking crazy.
Guys, haven't you read Gandhi's autobiography?
Yeah, but there's something about that. That town has a great sense of humor, man.
It has a great sense of humor because I think radio. They live in the truth in a way. You know, it's like you can't bullshit your way into Boston. You show up in a pair of leather pants. Hey guys, I just bought these leather pants. The fuck is he doing?
Get those off, queer.
I told you, my buddy Carmine Provenzano, New York's a little bit like that. I've been in Paris, and this woman, this really sexy saleswoman, told me that I looked like Arnold Schwarzenegger in this leather jacket, and I was like, I do. I must have gotten. I literally like. I heard myself going. I must. I think I put on muscle when I've been in Paris for real. Like I literally. This is what an idiot I am. This is how badly I've always wanted to be built like a guy like that. So I go. I'll buy the jacket. And it was at the time. It was like $400. I did not have any money. It was like, that's ridiculous. She goes, you know what would go really well. I was like, quoi, which means what in French. She goes, these leather pants.
No.
And of course I'm like, you're right. And her pants exactly was missing. From my life. Now I'm really going to get girls. By the way, I wasn't 16. I was like 24. So I literally show up. I literally, oh, by the way, I had to get boots that went with them because they didn't really fit. So I had these boots that go with these pants and these chocolate, milk chocolate, leather, thick leather pants. Not suede, fucking leather. Okay? Like couch leather pants. Okay? So my buddies, Carlo Provenzani, Eddie McCann,
how much
all
they
guys,
weigh?
way too much. They were so thick, I could have run through a thorn briar and been fine.
Really?
Yeah, really. Oh, they were literally, God. I remember them being so thick, I was like trying to get into them. I was supposed to stretch them. It was a disaster. And literally, I walk out, and my buddies, I think Carmine and Eddie McCann, Donnie Gannon, I mean, all these like Irish and Italian guys from New York, Carmine goes, what the fuck has he got on his legs? And I'm like, oh, these are from Paris. Before I even got Paris out, they were on me pulling my pants off, just getting them off me to throw out the window. Yeah, and then we fucked. Oh, sorry. Sorry. I mean, erase. Is this on a delay?
Yeah, we got it.
Dude, imagine if that's all people wore, just animal skins. If
that's my joke. I'm always like, yeah, that's so soft. What is that? And the first girls go, where'd you buy that? I'm like, buy it. I caught it, killed it, and made it, honey. My God, it's so fucking soft. What kind of fur is that? Puppy.
Oh,
no, that's me. But if they had chicken heads, we'd
wear
them.
It was pretty funny until that, and then it gets sad.
That's what I do, and then I go, yeah, but if they, yeah, but you know what? I would never do that. But they're easy to catch.
Have you seen that horrible video online where those 4chan guys are after that bitch that was
throwing
fucking
puppies? I hope they
catch
that bitch, and I hope they fucking happy face.
There's a chick who had a bucket full of puppies, man, and she walks up to a river and starts throwing the puppies in the water. The puppies are yiping. Where did it take place? What country?
Fuck, I can't remember.
I don't know what country. But you can find it, but 4chan is this internet, you know, it's a website filled with fucking psychos.
Great website. I love
great
it.
Website. Great.
The best website
they have
in the world,
some
Joe.
Funny shit that comes out of
it,
man.
What's that website?
4chan. That's where like the LOL cat meme. It all came from that. You know, those really hilarious cats that say like stupid, like almost Ebonics shit.
Right.
You know,
it's all from
says what, you know, like that, and you see it, and you're like, 4chan. It fits funny in a thread.
One of the best websites ever.
Really?
That's one of the funnest thing about the internet is these little fucking nigga, you gay. You know, like things that people just know when
just
to
the
insert.
And
it's reoccurring joke, though. A joke, though. Like people will save them, you know, and you'll find them online. Oh. Like there's a lot of really funny ones that you can. This thread smells gay, you know, and someone's spraying Lysol in the air.
One thing, though, tip if you go to 4chan's website, put it on private surfing mode on your browser or just clear your cache and delete your computer when you're done going to that website because you'll see some crazy shit at that website.
Did you hear about this website?
So what? You think
like,
it's illegal?
There's a lot of illegal stuff.
All right, let's not mention that, Brian. We don't want anybody getting locked up in the pokey.
Just be careful.
Hear about this website? I was just at Parlor Live in Seattle. By the way, that's a great club. Have you ever done that? Parlor Live?
In Seattle?
Yeah,
no.
It's really, really
I've only done the Underground, that small place.
Oh, no.
This
new place, they pack it in.
And I did a theater there.
They pack it in, and it's run by this guy, Ruben, and It's probably like a solid 300, but it's a smart group because they're all Microsoft people. They're all it's really cool. It's up in Bellevue where like Microsoft you get like a really cool kind of like eclectic but pretty educated audience.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of refreshing.
I love that. I like that about San Francisco.
Yeah, man. And so anyway, but the one of the comics that was there, poor girl, she was married and found out her husband was having an affair. And the reason she found out was because there's a website called Dolly Madison or something for married people if they want to have affairs.
Holly
Madison.
Holly Madison. And she had a – and he had his profile on there. You know, it's like, way to get caught, dude. She was like – my husband's on looking for – this is – weird. How
hilarious is that? That someone came up with a website for people that want to cheat.
Yeah, for other married people. So married people want to cheat on other married people. You know, it's like, hey, I'm married. You're married too. Let's go bang.
People are crazy.
It's great.
Well, that's scary.
What's scary that the guy was so dumb that he would create a fucking profile with his real name?
Yeah. With his real name and picture. Hey!
He put his pictures on
that's right. My profile is iwantogetcaught.com.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Come on.
Did you see that Twitter that I put out the other day about there was a website using HTML 5.0 and it's called thewildernessdowntown.com.
Somebody else tweeted
did
that.
Did you do it?
No.
It's, check it out. TheWildernessDowntown.com. You put in your address, like of, like the place you grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it takes Google, like Street View maps, and it mixes it with like videos of people running down streets. And it shows like aerial views zooming into your house, like it's like in a helicopter. And it just uses it from like this one address.
What?
And it's fucking trippy. I mean, it's not as cool after like a few minutes. You get the tricks and everything like that. But
right.
At first, you're sitting there going, wow, this is badass. So check it out. It's The Wilderness Downtown. Downtown.
They're just preparing us.
Yeah.
They're preparing us for the one state of total connectivity.
Yeah.
Where the whole fucking world
when
is connected together.
When the world wakes
together.
Up. Yeah. It's called the singularity. That's what they call it.
Kurzweil, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the idea that there's going to come some
a
sort
neural
of a connection.
Hub, right?
Yeah.
A neural global hub.
Well, I think that's one of the thing. One of the reasons why people hate deception so much and people hate lies so much is that everyone's trying to figure life out. And it doesn't help if you find out that someone's not being honest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can help me, your revelations, and they have. You know, you and I have talked a bunch of times about some crazy shit and helped each other very much. The reason why is because I absolutely believe that you're going to tell me the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that I'm going to tell you the truth. If you don't have that, if one person's telling the truth and the other person isn't, then you're fucked. Then you're in this weird situation like, well, this guy's not even looking at reality. This is bullshit. He's not helping me. He's actually hindering me.
Yeah,
he's getting in the way.
And I see that, but I see that all the time. One
all
of the
things
time. I find tiring about living in Los Angeles, and maybe I'm being unfair to Los Angeles, maybe it's everywhere, but I just always find that people are not only playing a character, they're not even themselves.
Yes.
They haven't even faced up to who they are because they're still playing a character.
How common are these characters? They're clearly defined, right? The actor
they're
character?
So clearly defined because they're almost archetypes. They're like, this is what a man is supposed to behave like, so this is how I'm going to behave. And by the way, this is also how my wife is going to behave, my woman's going to behave. So you have a man and a woman playing characters and coming together on almost a just the platform by which they're coming together is already fake. Nobody's being honest with each other. You've been cast as a guy
like
who's got to be tough
show.
And this way, and she's been cast as this other person.
It was like watching a show.
Yeah.
You know, I've watched people, like actors talk at a party, and it literally is like they're appearing on an episode of Friends.
Right.
Like everything they're saying is affected and fake, and there's like a certain quality to it, a certain way. You know what I hate when people say, "Good to see you." You know why they say good to see you? Because they can't remember if they met you or not.
So they
say good to see you, and it's like this creepy actor political thinking thing. Nice to meet you, and someone goes, "Oh, we met already." I'm like, "I'm sorry, I'm a retard. When do we meet?" Like, I just can't remember everybody.
Right.
That's just a problem. It's like there's only a certain amount of hard drive space that a human being has in his head for people.
Right.
They say it's like 150 people, right?
Right.
There's like been calculations done on it. Like at 150 people, you can't remember anybody more.
Right.
You don't have the space for it.
I want to piggyback what you're saying on this quote I heard from Eleanor Roosevelt, and she said, mediocre minds talk about people, elevated minds talk about events, and great minds talk about ideas. And so when you're talking about having hard drive for certain for people, you're not supposed to even aspire to talk about people. Think about what most people talk about. Look, pay attention to conversations. And you know what you'll find most of the time? They're gossiping. They're telling stories about other people's sort of shortcomings. It's why Us Magazine, those magazines are so popular. It's why so many of these talk shows that deal only with what's going on in Hollywood are so successful. I'm always amazed at people's capacity for gossip and how people can actually give a shit about somebody's relationship if they happen to be in a movie and stuff like that.
Well, I think it's
always
about stories too, though. Everyone's always done that. Back in the day, you had stories about people.
Well, good stories, though.
It's 2-hour detriment. It's serious. There's serious things going on in the world that raise very serious questions. Right? We're all affected by it, and it seems to me almost this sort of. I don't know if the word is analgesic sort of quality to sitting back and talking about things that have nothing to do with anything, that are by their very nature completely ethereal. For example, like how much weight this actress lost or how much weight this actress gained and things like that.
Do you ever watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians?
I do not.
I think you should get out. It's a really good show.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I hope they have the CDs.
I have a theory about all this stuff. This stuff you know, with gossiping and shit. I think what it really is, you know, human beings, I think it has a sort of a therapeutic effect on people. I think the questions that are around us all the time are so big and so scary and
absolutely.
So nutty.
It, of course, it's a form of connection. And I'm not talking about, I'm not talking about connection. I'm not talking about having a place for everything like that. I'm saying that the problem is that when that is, when that becomes all people think and talk about, there's something wrong. When there are other, there are things that are
a lot of what's going on is I think people are inundated with too much data. I think people are our brains are not set up to be on the internet yet. It's just the brain is just just being overwhelmed by shit. So I think we like to keep things really simple sometimes to distract ourselves from that.
Well, that's an interesting thing too, because I was also thinking about how technology and its exponential growth is kind of rendering masculinity in its traditional form completely obsolete.
Someone sent me an email thanking me. He goes, "Thank you for connecting rational thinking and manly shit together, because normally it doesn't exist." He goes, "Most people aren't open-minded. You know, if you're into manly shit, like everyone assumes you're a meathead. You're a dumbass. Like, you can't enjoy. I can't be intelligent and enjoy this.
Right.
But I do. So what's going on? It's in my nature. How can you tell me I'm wrong?
It's in your genes.
Yeah, I mean, how can you tell someone they're wrong with
that? But it's interesting how a lot of this stuff is becoming simulated. One of the reasons I think video games are so popular is because it's an outlet. It's an aggressive outlet for boys and men even to exercise that natural instinct to hunt and kill.
Absolutely natural, man. Ricky Schroeder was on a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, and Ricky like hunts like crazy. He's like,
does he?
Yeah, he's a
he would never strike.
He hunts everything, man. He hunts everything, and we were talking about like hunter gatherer instincts, and it brought up the idea, and I brought this up. I think there's probably like a series of genetic rewards we have for like catching and eating things and killing things because it's good for you, and because something is good for you, usually there's like some sort of a natural reward system going on, like with, you know, your brain chemistry. Mm-hmm. You get like, you know, a little blast of dopamine or whatever happens, mm-hmm. you know, a little blast of something. And we were talking about it, and we were talking about like fishing. Like, you ever go fishing, man, mm-hmm. and catch a big fish, mm-hmm. and then you cook and eat
it's unbelievable.
It feels good.
It's unbelievable.
Right?
Yeah.
I think we're getting away from all that stuff, and we all have these reward systems that are set up inside of our bodies. And if we don't get them in some direction and force them like into like good exercise or some fucking creative path or something, like we're basically making up for some rewards that we don't get all day anymore. You know, our lives now, if you work a shitty job, even if it pays well, if it's a shitty, boring-ass fucking job, it's not nearly as exciting as being a hunter.
Right.
You know? No, when you're a hunter, you know, you might not be successful every day, but there's some shit's going to go down.
You got to stalk.
And you got to look out for other animals that are trying to jack you. Yeah. You know? You got to all keep an eye out for mountain lions and crazy shit. I mean, if we're talking about like thousands and thousands of years ago.
Right.
Well, we still have those bodies. Yeah. We still have those bodies that are wired like sex feels good. Why? So you make babies. It's set up for that.
Exactly.
The hunt feels good. Why? So you keep hunting. There's just a reward system. So there's a deficit because we're not experiencing that.
We're
and
not
even though we do have dicks and we do have balls and we are men, like in society, like there's very little outlets for real manly shit.
There are very few outlets. Yeah, you can't
designed
hunt.
To kill shit.
Right.
We are designed to hunt
for
and
thousands
kill
of years. I mean, for millennia, we've been genetically programmed to provide and protect.
And
that takes courage and cunning.
And
strength.
As long as we're eating meat, okay. If you're eating meat, that means you're killing something.
Right.
And if you're killing something, you have to be violent.
Right.
There's got to be a violent release, and all of a sudden you're taking in all this animal protein, like you're killing things.
We needed our violence,
but there is no violence with most of us. There's no release.
Right.
There's no explosion.
That's
why. So that's why everybody's fucking crazy with stress.
Right.
We're eating meat and not being violent.
Well, you had said, you were all saying exercise. I so believe that like the first thing for anybody to do, in my opinion, is get in your body, man.
Yes.
Get in it,
get
and feel the machine. And exercise, I think, is crucial, man.
I don't know
where I'd be without.
Yeah, it's maintenance for the mind. The body, it's important,
absolutely.
But it's the mind. You can think way better. If I have anything that's fucking with me, I go out and I hit the punching bag. I just think about nothing. Just hit the punching bag. Kick it, punch it,
do
a few rounds. Nothing bothers me when it's over.
Yeah, I heard a statistic, it's not like Mayo Clinic and stuff, but it came from a fairly reliable source that said that 1 in 4 people, one in four people will die of cancer, but 1 in 4 people get cancer eventually, whether it's in their 80s or 90s, whatever. 1 in 7 athletes get cancer. they found. And there are a couple of theories for that. One is that exercise, you know, moves lymphatic fluid through your body, and that's how you keep your body clean and all that stuff. But and then you know, people who did sports who were at, but they're talking about athletes, like professional athletes and Olympic athletes, 1 in 7 versus your standard 1 in 4.
What kind of cancer? Breast cancer?
All or? Cancers. All
you
cancers.
Know, an interesting statistic that there's never been a professional athlete that has lived to be over 100.
I believe that, really? And I think it's probably because of the
kind of stress.
True.
I don't know if that's true, but I read that.
Well,
in a
athletes
book called it was called "Dead Doctors Tell No Tales" or something like that. It was all about minerals and.
Well, from what I understood, professional athletes, you know, from sports, do die earlier.
Well, it makes sense if you put an incredible amount of stress on your body.
Yeah.
Or ass cancer from eating so much like proteins and hard meats and stuff like that, maybe.
Not everybody gets
like
that.
Ass cancer.
You have to go straight Brock Lesnar to get that.
1 in 2.
Brock Lesnar almost died from diverticulitis. You know that, right?
Is that a liver disease of some kind?
No, it's from eating too much protein and no fiber. Really? You have, protein buildup in your gut, and it was actually like rotting a hole through it and creating abscesses. Yeah, like a real problem.
Did he start getting sick, or did he just like, Brock, no feel good?
Just doesn't, my buddy didn't Sam feel good for a long time. They said that he was operating at 60 to 80% of his potential, which is fucking terrifying when you think of how fucking fast and strong and athletic that dude is, and to think that he was like actually like sick the whole time.
That's so crazy.
He's crushing dudes, and
he's
sick.
Next?
He's fighting Cain Velasquez in October in Los Angeles.
Now, in Anaheim. Now, I've never seen anybody quite so explosive and so big. I mean, he walks
he's a
around.
True freak athlete.
Doesn't he walk around at 300 pounds and suck down?
Not anymore. I don't think he wants to take that toll on his body. But he's a bit over 265. He's actually lighter now than he's ever been before because he changed his diet.
Is he stronger? When you talk to other guys who fought him, does he feel like
dudes
Shane
who've trained
Carlin
with him
gave
say
him a beating?
Dudes who train. Well, yeah, he got clipped with a big punch. You know, Shane Carwin is a strong motherfucker too, and he can bang, dude. Shane Carwin has serious power. He's got power that there's not a single man on the planet that can take one of those bombs and be okay.
I agree.
He got fucked up, and Brock knew it. I think he felt it and was like, "Holy shit, this is like a new kind of thunderstorm coming my way." I don't think anybody ever hit him like that. I mean, everybody's like, "Brock can't take a shot," and Brock covered up and ran like. No, Brock survived and won the fight, stupid.
That's
all right?
Which is
he did what he had to do.
He took a beating.
He got clipped. Look, we knew for sure that Shane was going to be the better striker, but, you know, Shane has – but Brock has had some good – you know, like he dropped Randy with a right hand. He dropped Heath Herring with a right hand. It was just how quick Shane put it on him. It was just as soon as he started bombing, I was like, oh, shit.
Right.
It's like that dude's got some special power.
He does.
He's got some boom. Like he hits dudes, and you can see the look in their eyes. They're like, what the fuck? Like when he hit Frank Mir, like he hit Frank Mir like the short left hand inside, and you could see Frank Mir's face like a couple of times before he dropped him. He hit him with like these short punches.
Swelled up.
It was that, but it was the look in his face like, whoa. Like, this is some fucking rocky shit we're doing here.
Yeah, I'm getting
I'm getting hammered. Like, these are bombs. He's seeing sparks and trying to keep it together, and he's not expecting that. And then he's thinking, what happens if this motherfucker gets his arms loose and starts raining these on me? I'm going to sleep. Shit. And then he gets one hand loose, and I was like, oh, fuck, here it comes. Boom. Boom. And when Amir's legs give out, I'm like, God damn, Amir can take a shot, man.
Amir's a big guy.
He can take a shot because he took a gang of them before he went out. He took a gang of them. And Carwin was blasting him, man. That's Carwin. If he can get his cardio together, he can get his situation together. I think it was a situation with the Brock Lesnar fight.
He got really excited.
He thought it was over. He thought it was over, and he was just going to try to stop the fight and throw as many punches as possible.
Yeah, he got. Well, from what I heard, he got really.
It was
excited.
A strategy mistake. He didn't breathe, and he didn't. You know, he locked up.
He locked up,
and then he got literally lactic acid froze his muscles.
Right.
And the second round, he was done.
He said his arms.
But
wouldn't.
If he can figure out how to get his strategy together, and it might not even be to be that big, man. I mean, he's like two. He was like, he told me he cut, I think he said 16 pounds. So when I was talking to him the day of the fight, he was 16 above 265.
That's so weird how big these
he's
guys are.
He's giant!
That's so weird.
He's
how
a
tall
fucking
is he?
Giant! He's 6'1", 6'2".
That's so weird.
Yeah.
What did he do before this?
He's got these redonkulous gorilla paws, too. Yes. He's this dude, he shakes your hand, and you're like, what the fuck is that you call a hand? What is this giant thing
my question,
bone and, you know, and ham hawk?
Because there are bears and there are dogs. I'm a dog, and he's a bear.
He's a bear,
and no matter what happens, a dog never beats a bear in a fight, but what my question, I'm sure you've been asked before, is What I noticed about Fedor Emelianenko is his timing, his ability to time punches.
Brilliant timing. Yeah.
And it's just so much, it's so much better than everybody else's.
He springs else. In. He's really
and
good
his
at
ability and
in.
His speed.
Yeah,
he looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy. He's got to be, I bet you, if he were to really trim down, he's got to be 25 pounds overweight. I'm just talking about fat.
I think you're right. Yeah. It's incredible,
and
right?
It's incredible. And, that's the one thing I'd like to see him fight.
I've always said that I think that he could fight at middleweight. And I'm not kidding. I mean, I wouldn't want to see him do it. I enjoy the fact that he fights at heavyweight, that he's only 230 pounds.
Who in the world would stand up to him in middleweight? I mean,
I don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe the speed wouldn't be as big as an advantage at middleweight. Maybe at middleweight, maybe one of the things he's got going for him is he really is a small guy. And, you know, when he's throwing these punches, it's sufficient power to drop these guys. Because I'll tell you what, a guy like Patrick Cote, 185 pounder who can really punch, that motherfucker can knock out anybody. He can knock out a heavyweight. A heavyweight stood in front of Patrick Cote, but Patrick blasted him with a big shot. He could put away a heavyweight for sure. And maybe that's what Fedor's doing. Maybe him being like this lighter guy. There might be a benefit in being lighter.
But I mean,
look at the Frankie Edgar fight that just happened.
He walks around
230. 230 and fat. So if you look at Rich Franklin, okay, Rich Franklin is like above 200 pounds when he cuts down to 185. And now that he's campaigning at light heavyweight at 205, he's walking around, I would say, probably maybe 220 or something like that. Not too big, but bigger. And, you know, and Rich Franklin, you know, he's a fucking big guy, man. You know, he's a big fucking, I mean, if he wanted to be a fat guy, he could be 230 easy.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Rich Franklin was the UFC middleweight champion, and if you put fat on him, he could easily be Fedor's weight.
Can you tell me why? It really seemed to me like the Spider, Anderson Silva, like is bored or something. He just didn't want to fight.
No, that's not the case at all. Chael Sonnen is a fucking monster.
That's what I thought BJ Penn was.
Chael Sonnen is a serious wrestler. He is a hard-nosed motherfucker, and he will take fucking five punches in the face to try to take you down. And look, when he's dedicated and when he's on and when he's right, and he was in the Nate Marquardt fight and he was in the Anderson Silva fight, he's a bad motherfucker. He can take down anybody, man. He can take you down and he can beat the fuck out of you when he's on top of you. And you're going to have to deal with that shit for five rounds because he can keep doing it.
And by the
and
way,
he's going to push
Anderson
through the
Silva
pain.
Did deal with it, didn't
yeah.
he?
And then that's he caught him. Yeah. And then he caught him. You know, Anderson Silva, that's a master right there, man. He waited for his opening. He was always dangerous. 2 minutes left in the fight. No one gave him a chance. Slapped on that triangle. Bitch!
He's incredible.
It ain't over yet, bitch.
I was watching it with my father. My father was like, this guy's not good. And I go, dude. And I said, he's been a champion for 10 years. I go, do not count him out. Do not count him out.
Special. He might have lost every fucking round up until that moment, but he saw the moment and he fucking
is there gonna
slapped
be a rematch?
That bitch up. I don't know. I hope so. Either that. Well, I know that Chael Sonnen is Chael Sonnen wants to fight Anderson Silva again, but I also know that Vitor is going to fight Yushin Okami. That's like the next fight that just been announced. Mm-hmm. So Vitor's going to fight Yushin Okami. That means Vitor's not going to fight Anderson, which means I think they're probably setting up an Anderson Chael Sonnen rematch. I don't know the official word yet, though. But look, man, why not make the money? This is the money's here. Everybody wants to see it, you know?
Yeah,
I agree. You can say, hey, Chael Sonnen, he lost fair and square. He needs to go up. That's all well and good, but
I'd like to see
what's
it.
This for?
I want to see it again.
Yeah, everybody needs to get paid.
Because that was in some ways a draw in a lot of people's mind, right?
When you just have the fucking highlights from that first one and put them in a UFC ad, dun, 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 Chael Sonnen taking him down, dun, 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 over and over and over and over again, you know, the Chael Sonnen dominated for four rounds,
right?
You know, until getting caught in this triangle, he vows to never let it happen again.
Right.
You know, and then you have Anderson, he's talking in Portuguese.
And for some reason, you just have me slide by like this with a thumbs up and no shirt
like
on
that,
with my average
like
body.
The Old Spice guy. Do you ever feel like that Old Spice commercial? Like somebody might have saw your act.
Somebody. I've had a lot of people tell me that.
Dude, so
this
I watched
dude's
that.
Doing your act.
I watched that and I was like, somebody saw Brian Callen's act.
There
this
it is.
Is weird.
There it is.
Like that stuff that you see in the Old Spice commercial was really funny. I mean, we're not accusing. It's very possible they came up with it on their own.
Yeah.
But it's very possible they saw your comic.
I never worry about it, you know. I just figure as a comic, you got to just keep inventing.
Your persona though is far more intense and sexual than that guy's persona. What Brian does is a lot of very similar type stuff on stage to what that guy does, but much more surreal and fucked up and sexual, and like to the point where it makes you uncomfortable sometimes. Very very funny shit.
Keep it on YouTube.
I mean, It just felt like
you
it was very influenced.
You got to see a live there. The stuff I'm doing now, it's been very satisfying. Because I noticed that the audience goes with me if I commit to it. So I always just go, this is what I think is funny. Whatever. I had a bunch of military dudes. Sometimes I like this to be really obnoxious because I walk up. I think I was in San Antonio. It was a bunch of military guys, named Macho, you know, tough guys. And I was like, I walk up and I go, I was wearing this tight American Apparel shirt. And I was like, guys, first of all, I want to apologize for my body. Sorry about being so shredded. I know. My back looks like a barrel of snakes. Whatever. Let's move on. You know. And I was just completely. I kept apologizing for my body. I kept apologizing for how vast my back. I'm 170 pounds. Okay, regular dude. All right. And these guys are all just jacked. And I think sometimes I have so much fun being completely either totally absurd or just doing what I just think is funny and just, you know, just. And they get it. People always seem to get it if you commit to it. It's when you apologize that I think they sense you're lying. But I'm not lying.
Yeah, it's just got to be what you think is funny. You know, yeah. Brian is he's got a very unique sense of humor. And
thanks. That means one of
the funniest things that I've ever seen anybody do, we were in a hotel, and there's a video of it. I'll get Eddie Bravo to Twitter the video, put it online. But there's a video. Do you know what the video is called on YouTube?
I don't know what it's called, but
I wish I knew, ladies and gentlemen. I will find out later. But it's like if you look up like gay jujitsu porno or something like that,
kung fu porno.
And what it was he started doing this character. We were just hanging out in this hotel room. It was a weekend of a UFC, like a long time ago, and Brian just starts doing this character about a jujitsu guy who fucks dudes when he holds them down. And it was literally funny to the point where I couldn't breathe.
You were dying. You fell off the bed. I remember
we couldn't breathe. It was literally, if I had to look back on one of the funniest things I've ever seen, if I like vote for the funniest things in my entire life as a human that I've ever seen, I think you win.
Oh,
I think that
amazing.
Might have been the funniest thing I've ever seen ever.
That means a lot to me.
We were so high, though. Oh, my God. We were so high. This was when I was first really getting into pot, too.
How long have you been smoking weed? How many years has it been now?
It's been, what is it, 2010? Now I think it's about 9 years, 10 years.
10 years.
Is it 9 or 10?
Was you the first?
I know I was getting high when 9/11 happened. I was already getting high. Yeah, because I wrote about smoking.
The first 30 years of your life or whatever, you were completely, you never did anything.
I thought that all drugs were bad for you. Yeah. I thought that all drugs just made you a loser, and I was always terrified of being a loser. You know, that was the one thing that I was scared of more than anything. It's like, you know, I grew up in like this situation where, you know, like Boston is like, it's a very harsh town, you mm-hmm. know, and I did not have a fucking clue as to what I wanted to do for a living. And everybody around me seemed to know, you know, everybody was like, you know, going to college. I didn't want to go to college. I was like, what am I going to college for? I'm going to college just so people don't think I'm a loser. Like, I have no idea what I want to do.
But I wonder, why is it that like you can go to like bars in Long Island or Brooklyn or in Boston and get in a fight so easily in Philly, so easily. You can walk in with the wrong hat and get in a fight. Whereas in the Pacific Northwest, like Seattle or whether it's in San Francisco or even L.A., it's just not the same thing.
People are way
cooler. Shot.
They're just way mellow.
Yeah, way more mellow than on the East Coast. How much you spend much time on the East Coast, Brian?
What?
You spend much time on the East Coast?
Yeah, I mean, well, for Ohio, that was like where we would go for vacations or weekends.
That's a little bit more Midwest. You know?
Did you notice the East Coast people being aggressive?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely more drunks and like fights and like especially like New York.
This is also a thing about the East Coast, though. There's a no bullshit clause that you have to adhere to.
There's definitely a no bullshit clause, man.
That you don't get out here. It's like, out here, bullshit just breeds and runs rampant and fucking and feeds.
Yeah.
Well, because you know, it's what Sam Shepard, the great writer, wrote about. He said, "Why do you always keep your? Why do you have all your characters? A lot of your characters in California, around California, the L.A. area." And he said, "Because this is a place people come to reinvent themselves. It's a place that where people have no roots, or they don't want to talk about their roots. You know, and so it gave him a chance to create these characters that were playing a character, you know, that they were basically lying, you know, and I guess that's part of it. Maybe you don't have, like, I think a lot of times when you come from Boston or New York, you're again, we were talking, like you were saying, you're cast in a role. You play a certain role. You're given your attitudes. You're given what to believe in. You're given, you know, how to behave as a man. There are strong, resilient lines to that, and don't step out of them, okay? And whereas when you're in L.A., there aren't as many people looking. You know, a lot of people come here from somewhere, so they're not sort of held down by that tradition.
Right, you're not born into a system.
You're not born into a system.
Yeah, neighborhood system especially, right?
Man, a neighborhood system is is very powerful.
Very powerful.
It's very hard to get out of. You don't get out of it unless you physically move out of it a lot of times.
What's really fascinating is when people start fucking other dudes' wives. That yeah. shit's fascinating.
You call it fascinating. I call it a turn on.
In front of you?
No, dude. There's some humans that I know, some civilians, non-actor types, that are, you know,
yeah.
having intramarital dalliances with next door neighbors'
wives.
There's
a lot. There's a lot of like that swing that goes on.
I hear about
and
that
stuff.
Shit. Well, there's a lot of people doing it on a sneak tip too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey. Listen, I don't want to hear about you in the fucking news. I don't want to hear any murder, suicide.
Also,
maybe
can you
stop
not do
fucking
it?
Your friend's
yeah,
wife.
Can you not do it? Can you not do it in your neighborhood, like next door?
You know that guy? Isn't he your buddy? Like, don't you say hi to him? Wait a minute. You've had that guy over for a barbecue, right? You did, right? Yeah, and you're fucking his wife? What?
So I haven't seen that, actually.
Really?
I'm naive.
People are freaks,
man. There's a lot of that going on.
There's a lot of people wanting to distract themselves from this crazy world. They want to fuck. That's what they want to do. They just want to scratch that itch. They might
so
as well
dirty.
Be fucking playing Dungeons and Dragons or sticking Q-tips in their
I don't
ears.
Have time to fuck. I'm too busy asking the big questions.
What's that?
I don't know.
Distractions.
Yeah.
There's no big question.
Something crazy happened to me at Fuddruckers the other day.
Yeah, tell me about that story.
So I'm in Burbank Fuddruckers, and I'm eating. My girlfriend's across from me. And I see her, like, staring kind of weird off to the side of me. I'm like, what's she looking at? Whatever. And then suddenly she stands up and taps this table that's behind me, that taps this guy on the shoulder and screams, "This man's trying to steal your purse!" And points to this other guy that's sitting on the other side of me. And he stands up and he goes, "I did not try to steal it. No, you're mistaken." And next thing I know, he runs out. I'm like, what the fuck just happened? And what supposedly happened is this guy comes in, Indian guy, which is even weirder. He sits down, and then he takes this duffel bag, and he pulls out a coat and puts it on this woman's purse that was on the floor.
Yeah.
And then he was starting to scoop it up into his duffel bag. But stupid me runs out of Fuddruckers and chases the guy. And I'm like halfway down the street going, why the fuck am I chasing after this guy? He didn't even have the purse. Why am I running after him? There was a
instinct.
And there was a car, getaway car. He jumps in the getaway car and takes off. And the car was like a brand new car. It was like a brand new model.
It's called Prey Drive.
Do you think that you would have done that if your girl wasn't there?
No, I think if he wasn't Indian, I would have not have done that.
Like, really?
I think the fact that he was Indian, I'm like, oh, it's Indian.
He can't hurt me, in other words.
Right. What does that mean?
Are you
crazy?
I don't know, man.
You don't think an Indian guy could beat your ass?
You know what? That accent's really hard to sound intimidating.
Yeah.
don't fuck around. I'll give you a dad smack. Right?
It really is.
I'm not joking.
No, it really does not.
It's really too bad that that's a hack accent, because it really is a fun one.
Yeah.
You know? Indian accent's a fun one.
You can't, you know. But that's...
And, you know, any jihad accent, those are hacked out, too.
I'll give you a tight smack. I'm not joking.
Yeah.
Don't fuck around with me.
It's very offensive, though, that you find that funny. That's just how they're communicating.
Yes, it is, and I apologize. Listen. Although, it'd be funny to see a Hindu cop. If you had one in Boston, nobody would stop.
Do you think,
freeze!
Is that racist to make fun of them behaving like
no,
that?
No. It's a mannerism. Their voice. Look, I have a lot of respect for any culture, but I mean, that's... I think Hindi is you hold your tongue in a certain way, and when you learn English, you that's how some of them speak. However, a lot of... You know, India was a British colony, so a lot of them... will speak sort of with an English accent, sort of a combination.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah. It is fascinating. There's a couple of different accents coming over there. It's fascinating to think that the whole world, like basically like 150 years ago, was equal to like the population of India.
That's right. I think
the whole world was like a billion.
There are more than a billion people now in India. India is becoming a huge powerhouse. It's such a vast area.
There was an episode of Anthony Bourdain's show. You ever watch that show?
No.
No Reservations?
No.
One of my favorite shows.
Really?
I love it. It's fun. He's really cool. He's this guy who's a chef, and you know, he's like, he apparently was just a wild punk rocker type chef, and he, you know, did a lot of drugs and wrote books about the crazy world of chef lives. That chefs are all getting fucked up after shows.
Yeah.
Their shifts, rather.
In a kitchen.
Yeah, and then it just really hilarious stuff. And he goes all around the world eating like these really cool places, and like, you know, everywhere, you know, all over.
I'd
the
love to
world.
Do that. Actually, I love food.
Oh, dude, you got to watch the show. I completely forgot what we were talking about.
Buttholes.
No.
No.
Right.
India.
And how fast it's becoming.
So
superpower.
He went over, right. So he went over there and was in India and was went on a set of like one of these dudes like doing those India fucking action movies. Mm-hmm. Like how many movies they film over there?
Oh, dude, they
film
make
insane amounts.
They make something like five times as many as Hollywood or something like that. It's really India's come such a long way. I think in 75, even in the early 80s, India couldn't feed itself.
Really?
India couldn't feed itself. Now India is a huge exporter of grain and rice and a lot of other goods. India is going to become because it's such a decentralized. It's because its government is so ineffective. You could make the argument that India is becoming a huge economic power.
Don't finger that while you talk about India.
No.
That's disrespectful.
Continue.
Mother India.
I know,
don't be fingering that.
Every time
thing,
I think about India,
he's fingering this. Now I can't think of it. That one's off. That's yours now.
Juicy
you own
Indian
that.
Pussy.
That's yours. You got that one. That's all yours. Speaking of India and countries in America, Brian, play that fucking crazy Glenn Beck thing. I am starting to get concerned.
Did you email it to me?
Yes, I emailed it to you.
I want to hear it.
This is what I'm getting concerned about. I'm getting concerned about this tag team fucking duo of Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin, because now they're like combining their retard superpowers and they have even more dummies that are into what they're saying.
Okay.
Dude, there was a giant Glenn Beck rally on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's "I Have a Dream" speech. You got to see this.
Really is.
If you haven't seen this, you got to watch this on YouTube. Okay, it's Glenn Beck and is pandering at its finest, and he's doing it in front of, it looks like, a million white people. And they're saying it's only 100,000. I call bullshit. I say they're trying to downplay this because they're worried about this motherfucker taking over the world, okay? Because the retards are showing up in millions for this dude. This dude's got it locked up. He's picked up the full retard vibration. He knows exactly what they want to hear. You gotta, he's playing them.
The street approaching the Washington Monument.
White people are going crazy. White people are acting like they're minorities.
Is this a Glenn Beck rally?
Something
yes. White people are trying to take back happening. The world. Watch this. Look at this.
Something
listen, this. Listen.
That is beyond man is happening.
Listen to this. Oh my God.
America today begins to turn back to God.
Okay, that motherfucker should be doing tricks right now and handing out a hat. Okay, he's putting on a fucking show.
For too long.
He was a stand-up comic, by the way.
Yes, he was, and a terrible one.
Yeah.
He's a genius, though, for retard control.
Very dramatic.
With the hypnotist.
Oh, he's a
genius.
He pauses,
he looks down.
He cries.
We have
awesome.
There's nothing scarier than dumb people that sound smart. Yeah, he's a
sharp profile.
A sharp-talking, dumb dude.
Worried about scars. And thinking about the scars and
he's a dangerous motherfucker.
Scars.
You know, people are downplaying this guy. This guy is starting to learn how much power he has. And it's growing and growing and growing. And his power base, as dumb as he is, as crazy as he is, as much sponsors pull off of his show because he says that Obama's a racist, that guy's getting more
That's
and more
That's why
you've
got to be very careful of anybody.
Now play the Palin one because this is fucking bananas too.
Bananas!
There's a thing that's going on in this country where people are happy to be dumb.
Well, it's fear-based, not thought-based, right?
It's fear-based, it's not thought-based, and they also want a low bar. They enjoy this low bar.
That's the same one.
A dad.
I wanted to have a dad.
No, it's not. Fast forward it for a couple steps, and he brings up Sarah Palin.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
And she's speaking to you today as a mother of someone in the military. Ladies and gentlemen,
this is terrifying. This is the chapter in the book where shit gets crazy. This is where the earth starts to fucking eat itself. This is like our fall of Rome.
This
right
is
here.
The Wagnerian music.
This is our
Wagner
fall of
in
Rome.
The background.
Really dumb people are trying to hijack the country. Oh, my God.
It's nationalism, huh?
Oh, my God.
What an honor. What an honor. We stand today at the symbolic crossroads of our nation's history. And all around us are monuments to those who have sustained us over the years in word or deed. There in the distance stands the monument to the father of our country. And behind me, the towering presence of the great emancipator.
There's a billion white people out there. Look at all those white people.
At the moment of its most perilous time.
There's probably one black guy and he's just crying because he's so happy there's so many white people around him because he loves white people.
And over these grounds where we are so honored to stand.
Oh, shut it off. Shut it off. I can't take it. I can't take it.
She's not a good speaker.
I can't take it. She's terrifying, man. That bitch is frightening the fuck out of me.
Well, because you know what?
Together.
Because I believe when you look at when I look at Sarah Palin, I never even see a platform. I don't see a philosophy. I see ambition. That's all I see.
Yes, exactly.
Ambition for power.
That's scary to me, man. That scares the fucking shit out of me.
History's littered with you know, demagogues who ended up doing terrible things.
And
in the name of what? Our team and the truth. And the truth with a capital T.
And we all have this desire to have someone lead us. We all have this feeling where we need someone who's smarter and wiser, who represents us. You know, and when you're really fucking dumb, the problem is really dumb people, they get a say in everything too. And they're subject to a lot of tricks.
Mm-hmm.
They're subject to nationalism. They're subject to these kind of ridiculous rah, rah, rah America speeches that don't say jack shit. They say nothing.
Right.
It's all just this cheerleading fucking event. And they're subject to it.
My team versus your team.
Yeah, they can't help it. They're dumb. They don't know they're being bullshitted. They grew up around dumb people. They go to work with dumb people. There's no one in their family that's interesting or ask any questions at all, and they just get sucked right into it, man.
Right.
And she seems to speak real good. And she seems like a normal person.
There was a scientist talking, I think it was on NPR somewhere, and he was saying that human beings are what is the word? Human beings are cognitively selective, okay, naturally. So what we'll do is when we already have a point of view based on our childhood, based on our experiences, and we have a strong point of view. And what happens is if we're listening to a speech or we're listening to a philosophy or reading a book, we'll cherry pick only the facts that support and bolster our argument.
Yes.
And one of the difficult things to do as you get older, and I think that's very important to do, is to always step back and take a look at the flaws in your own argument and the flaws of your own philosophy and in the paradigm that you carry around with you, because that's how you grow. Take a look, a critical and honest look at yourself all the time. That's my favorite thing about you. You've always been so ridiculously critical and honest with yourself. Not critical, but just always very honest, always reassessing. I've always seen that with you. That's why you've always
grown. Make mistakes, man. You can make mistakes because of emotions. You can make mistakes because of insecurities.
It's very powerful to look at other people and go, you know what? I fucked up. I fucked up. I'm sorry. Yeah. I fucked up. You never look bad when you're honest and vulnerable.
You know, if you're a wild person, like I know you are, mm-hmm. and I've been subject to being a, you know, I mean, I'm not very good at normal life, you know. When you're living like a wild person, you know, basically a comic does whatever the fuck they want, man. You're living as a professional comic, you know, and everybody else is connected to some sort of a grid, and you're living wild and crazy. You're liable to do some crazy shit.
No doubt.
Liable to find yourself in some weird situations,
man,
a little too drunk, a little too nutty.
When nobody watching for a man is a bad situation.
Yeah.
Hey, look, I got all this cash, nobody's looking, and I'm in Vegas.
You can be nuts. You can make mistakes, you know. It's so easy to make mistakes.
Well, there's this Zen poet that wrote a really cool poetic book called One Continuous Mistake, and that's what she calls life. Life is one continuous
mistake.
Well,
it is. It's like jiu-jitsu. You know, you start out, you get tapped all the time, and eventually you get a little bit better at not getting tapped. Eventually you start tapping people, but there's always going to be more. It never ends.
It doesn't
go away. It just gets bigger and bigger and crazier and crazier. It doesn't end.
Do you ever surf, by the way?
No, but I went boogie boarding in Hawaii, and it was fucking awesome. Dude, I did not think it would be so viscerally satisfying.
I was just in France for 9 days in the south of France called Biarritz. Don't worry about it. My buddy made a fortune in the banking industry.
You say this, it makes me so attracted to
you. I know. The point is that I look, number one, great in a wetsuit, but I took lessons from the I took lessons from the current French national champion in surfing.
God damn.
Third day, he had me on a wave.
Holy shit.
I surfed five waves. I was like, this is the greatest experience of my life. But
really?
He was a huge part of catching waves, a huge part of being a great surfer.
Right.
is understanding exactly how to read the ocean. It's being able to catch the wave
yes.
and the right wave. And that takes literally so much. It takes rhythm. Uh-huh. It takes patience. It takes strength. I'm glad I didn't start surfing when I was younger, because I would have been out there now with no resume and just a guy who could surf tubes, because that is addictive, man.
Dude, don't tell me about it. I can't imagine being high doing it. Oh my God. You know, that's what everybody does.
Really? What a surprise.
That's what they do. I mean, that surfer culture is like connected. So
have you seen Riding Giants?
Deep with weed.
Have you seen Riding Giants?
No.
I can't believe you haven't seen Riding Giants.
What is it?
Can you just put it up on YouTube? Well, it's Laird Hamilton. They surf tidal waves.
Oh, I did see that.
Waves that are 6 to 9 stories high.
Mexico, right?
All over the world.
Dude,
they go in the middle of the ocean.
I didn't understand how crazy this was until I went to Hawaii
they
and did boogie boarding.
Dude, the waves, when they surf giants, waves. They move at 35 miles an hour, so you have to be towed in
by
a jet ski.
Oh, my God.
If you fall. Laird Hamilton was riding. He was riding, and they said if he had fallen that wave, there's a 50% chance he would have just died. You don't come up, because when you fall, there's another wave that's 6 stories high behind you waiting to hit you again. And sent 100 yards into the ocean.
Dude, oh my God. And they don't even have life vests on.
Life vest?
Nothing. Oh my God.
You gotta either surf that tube or you die, America.
No, let's find out if they did have life vests. Did they?
No, they didn't.
They definitely
didn't. No, you gotta watch.
Oh my God.
You can't have a life vest because then you can't dive under the water and be safe.
Oh my God.
Dude, riding giants.
Oh my God.
Riding giants
and
stepping.
You can't have a life vest.
No,
the fucking waves are 90 feet high and you. They do.
Yeah.
Oh,
no, they don't.
Yeah,
no, they don't.
They're in this video.
You're not allowed to wear a life. Those are the guys on the jet skis, not the guys surfing.
Isn't that a life vest?
No, that's not a life vest, dude. You know what that is?
That's
a pad for when they if they hit the ground, they don't get the wind knocked out of them and then go to sleep.
Yeah, when a lot of dudes get paralyzed,
that's
man.
Hamilton right there surfing a wave. That
you got to talk into the microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's Laird Hamilton surfing a wave that if he had fallen, he wouldn't have made it.
Okay, and the video is entitled Riding Giants.
Yeah.
You could find it on YouTube.
And
oh my God.
Yeah. It's Laird Hamilton.
It actually said, yeah, oh my God.
That's
when
hilarious.
I said, oh my God.
Yeah.
Damn.
And this guy's the first big rider. There was a Hurricane 5 or something in Hawaii, and he went out on the water and surfed.
Until you go into the water just to swim, all this is very abstract. You don't realize the power of the ocean.
It's,
you know, I know a lot of people ridiculous. That have never swam in the ocean before. You know, you ever get caught in a wave or in a tide where you get pulled back?
Oh, yeah.
That's scary as fuck,
oh,
man.
My God. The ocean's so strong.
Dude, that is scary as fuck when you get caught in a tide.
Fishermen and those guys never lose their respect for the ocean. Never, ever. It's like if you surf in like that crab fishing, if you fall in that water, you got about 5 minutes before hypothermia and you die.
Why don't they have like a cord in a helicopter? Like rent a helicopter to follow you around with like a safety cord just in case if you get fucked
because
up, they
you
can
can't
pull
do
you.
That because because the thing about surfing, when you're surfing waves that are 6 stories high, is you have to have the ability to dive under the water. If you tried to be like just a helicopter with a thing to hold you there and you got caught in that wave,
right.
First of all, it would break the cord. It would break the cord or it would rip you in half.
Those waves,
when you get caught in those waves, if you're unlucky enough, you'll get sent underwater 20 feet and thrown a football field.
Oh, my God,
and
dude.
And you've got to hold your
Listen
breath
to what he
for
said.
That whole thing.
Thrown a football field. A football field underwater. Flying at 30 miles an hour.
Yeah, you're in a washing machine.
God. Oh, what's that? A boulder. Doosh! There's your head, stupid.
Done.
That's it. That's
done.
A wrap, son.
Hey, guys die.
Dead forever. Oh, they die all the time,
this one,
man.
Dude, this
they
one
die
dude
all the time.
Off of San Francisco would paddle out a half a mile, okay?
Oh, my
and
God.
And there are sharks, everything. He'd have a wetsuit, and there was a wave
they
that
breed
was
up there. That's where the
God.
Sharks breed.
For 15 years, he surfed that alone in an early morning and early evening and would surf waves that were literally 6 stories, 8 stories high.
Oh, my God.
And the first day, everybody Surfer Magazine brought a bunch of the best surfers out there. One guy died.
Has waves that high?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
There's a break where the waves are tidal waves.
Really?
Tidal waves.
Is it only in the winter or is it all year round?
I can't believe you haven't seen this movie.
I'm terrified. I'm terrified
Dude,
of getting...
Riding giants.
There's two things that I've always been terrified of golf and surfing.
Ah, oh, man, I know.
Because when I had my problem with pool, where I was playing pool 8 to 10 hours a day, I mean, yeah, it was
obsessive.
It was a massive obsession, but it was also fun as fuck. There's something really rewarding about getting good at pool. And I never got to like professional level, but I got decent where I could run out if I had an open shot, you know?
You were good.
And when I started playing, like when I was playing like 8, 10 hours a day, you get like these like crazy rewards for figuring out racks. There's like this, it's really like we're little junkies for some chemical that you get when you run out. Yeah. It's like, it's a difficult thing to do. So you get this weird, like, I figured it out reward, you know, like, like you're figuring out life. Meanwhile, you're just stuck in a room knocking balls into a hole like a retard.
Yeah, but
your brain
it's about
being
something
flooded
more
with
than
this reward chemical, and it gives you the ability to solve problems and use patience and try to come up with creative solutions. You know, even though it seems to be just like balls on a table with six holes, what it really is you got to be creative in solving solutions and be rational in like how you do it and control the ball. It's very, very, very addictive.
Yeah,
but I know golf is too, so I've been terrified of golf
because
everybody I know that's smart, they get into it. They knock a ball. They're like, it's like exciting. It's fun.
It's
and getting it, it's so rewarding. I'm like, no, no, no.
My father takes lessons. He goes to camps.
He's
nuts.
And golf apparently is way more popular than pool. So if that's the case, then it's got to be even more rewarding. That only makes sense, right?
No doubt. You're outside. I mean, you're outside.
Yeah.
First of all, the setting. And it's never, it's all you're doing is swinging. Just swing the club.
Yeah.
And you keep
That's what cigars are all about, too. You know, cigars are all about two things. When you're lounging after you had a big fat steak, or like if you're out with just a bunch of dudes and you know there's no chicks and just like
yeah. Or if you want to stink up. If you want to stink up a restaurant,
let's
ruin that
stink
one's
and I'm
going to
enjoy this. I'm going to enjoy this.
Right.
I'm going to knock this ball around. I'm going to talk some shit.
Right.
You know, I'm going to tell you about this porno that I jacked off to the other day.
Right. I can say everything I want. I can say anything I want.
If, when you get married, especially if you're a civilian, if you get married and you have kids and you're at home all day, you know, or you know, after you get off work, you're at work all day, you have to adhere to one code, then you get home and you have to adhere to another code because you're not even allowed to swear on the baby,
right?
You know, you don't get much chance to cut loose and
stink up the Olive Garden with your cigar
and tell stinky pussy stories from high school.
That's the whole fucking deal. Smell my finger, I remember that. Dude, smell this.
How many guys have told you stinky pussy stories and you've been captivated like it was a goddamn Stephen King book? Because we've all had these stories. Eddie Bravo has the best one, because he was having sex with a girl and she had a yeast infection and her feet smelled at the same time. And he was having sex with her
in
a truck.
I'll still bang her.
Like fucking her in an SUV, and he had to open up the window and stick his head out. It's hilarious when he tells it. It's brilliant.
I think he actually told it in one of the podcasts, one of the past ones.
Did he?
You know what's funny? You know what's
really?
Funny is
he told it on Opie and Anthony.
I've been in those situations where it's been, you know, like to use Jim Norton's joke, it smelled like an open grave. Literally, I was like,
which is the best way to describe it.
It was
too.
An open grave. I've been in those situations where I've been like, this is the worst smell I've ever.
It's
I might
worse
catch
than
a
shit.
Disease.
It's worse
and guess
than
what?
Shit.
I keep going. That's
it
what
smells
a mess I am.
Worse than shit.
Like girls will be like, "Oh my god!" I'm like, "Whatever."
You know,
yeah, it looks like I took a shit in the toilet.
The worst is
fuck.
When a girl doesn't, or she doesn't react to the fact that it's happening.
That's
you don't address it.
No,
this girl I know had a really stinky pussy, and I would know I was going to eat her pussy out. I still wanted to do it, so I just gargled before I did it, and kept a little gargle in my mouth, and just kind of spit it on her pussy when
I was
getting
her out. You spit Lysol on her pussy. That's actually
it's
kind of genius.
Mouth
it's kind of genius. Why is it
chemicals,
so tingly?
Yeah,
spitting chemicals
it makes it wet too.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's minty. It's
and
delicious.
It just probably smelled like shit with Listerine covering it.
And then the Listerine burns the shit out of your urethra.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, I probably killed their chances of having babies.
No cavities either.
I'm allergic to a spermicide on condoms, man.
Really?
Yeah.
What does it do to your dick?
I haven't worn a condom since the 80s, but the point is...
I saw one once and I broke out in hives.
Hey, dude, I get that. That detergent gets in my pee hole. Holy shit, man. I'm
really?
Done. I'm peeing for the next, like, you know, fucking. Maybe that's gonorrhea. Anyway.
Oh!
No, but I mean, for real, man. I'm allergic to that shit.
Yeah, man. It's, there's a lot of goddamn chemicals that aren't good for your system.
Well, we're exposed to so many different chemicals all the time.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, what do you think about fluoride in the water? Is that all bullshit?
I think it's all bullshit.
What do you think? You think fluoride's healthy to be drinking?
I think it's been around for 40, 50 years, and we've had a pretty good control group, judging from what we've seen. And nah, I don't think it's. I don't think it has any effect.
I don't think any of these things
have effect until they are combined with. I think what happens with the human body is we get exposed. We get exposed by countless chemicals, and who knows what they're like in combination. You know, hydrogen and oxygen. Yeah. If you put them together in the right combination, to form water. Right. I mean, it's the same thing with anything.
Right. Like cigarettes and birth control can be deadly.
Right. Right.
Truly, people die. Girls die if they are smoking cigarettes and they take birth control.
Because they get blood clots, they can go into stroke.
It's terrifying.
And so for me, that's always what it is. It's a question of what are we being exposed to? What is the umbrella of chemicals? When is that happening? And all that stuff. What are the windows for it? It's complicated.
It's very complicated.
The body. What I've found is I've always been really into health, and I've always been really into especially keeping my energy where I need it. And as I got older, I would always take different things. Like I'd try supplements, and I'd try this and more protein. And what I find actually for me is if I get enough sleep and then I eat just enough, your stomach is the size of a softball. You know, the adult stomach, the adult male stomach is the size of a softball. If I eat, like just controlling my portions and eating good, real food. As long as I get enough sleep, sometimes that's all I need. Just personally, for me, you know, it's just a question of I can't remember what the hell we're even talking about.
He got to
stroke. You were talking about going.
That's exactly why I'm like.
You went on a tangent. That's what happened.
You were talking about if you go to the Applebee's, just use your palm of your thumb. If you could fit the food on there, just eat that.
That's it, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Good luck, America.
It is true. I mean, I always feel better when I have small meals throughout the day. I don't feel like as lethargic, but I'm a glutton. And I will sit down and eat immense portions of food.
I've been eating a lot of steak lately, like, dude, all day.
Tell me about it. When I work out, if I do kettlebells or if I do jiu-jitsu, I just come home and eat steak.
It's pretty bad for you, right?
Dude, I love meat. No, it's not. Meat's not bad for you at all. There's no evidence.
I don't think meat is bad for you. I think meat is bad for you if you don't exercise.
I think meat's bad for you if you don't also eat vegetables and things like that, maybe.
But I think, you know, there's another thing that I read in this silly quote that I'm going to give you that I don't know if I could back up. It was in the same book about all people over 100 that live to be over 100, almost all of them were red meat eaters.
Well, that's actually, if you go to TED.com and the guy who studied the 6 blue zones in the world where people live well over 100 years old, and one is in Sardinia, the other is in Okinawa, the other is actually the Seventh-day Adventists who live out in Montana, and he just took a look at these 6 different blue zones. What's the common thread? All of them ate meat, actually. All of them eat meat, fish, whether it's fish or but meat, and all of them there are a couple other things that they do, but the other thing is a lot of them eat fermented things like yogurt and stuff like that. And
that's very important.
And in their culture, they also all have something to live for. They all have a reason they get up every morning.
And a religious reason?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The major thing that he found had nothing to do with religion. It had to do with how connected those communities were. Connection, they find, when people have strong, bonded communities – in villages and things like that, where they take care of each other, and where even if somebody doesn't do as well, if there's a cultural sort of notion that it doesn't matter, you take care of that person, you make them feel safe. Those are the longest lived people. And in the book, The Outliers, where he looks at this place called Rosetto, which was this village in Italy called Rosetta founded this in the foothills of Pennsylvania. They created this community, built churches, and they would all move from the marble quarries and move there, and then there was a marble quarry close to there. So this town, Rosetta. So this doctor went there to do this convention, and he was talking to another doctor who had been practicing in Rosetta for a long time, and this was in 1961, and he said, you know, I got to tell you, these people cook with lard. A lot of them are overweight, but they all come from the same part of Italy, and none of them die of heart disease. They die of old age. Weird. And he went, that's weird, because heart disease right now is an epidemic in our country. So let's go study it. So he took a bunch of people, and they were studying it. They were like, maybe they come from a really hardy stock. But the problem was the people that would move out of that town and go to another town would die of heart disease. So he's like, so it's not a genetic hardy stock, although people there live long. He said, what is it? They're eating, not even cooking with olive oil anymore. They're cooking with lard, and they do exercise, but they don't exercise as much. And what they found was that they had a really, really strong community. and that they all had this incredible support system. So if somebody didn't make as much money or was a little slow or was, they still felt loved. And when they would go to these medical conventions, they started trying to talk about health in terms of community. In other words, human beings, yeah, you need to control your cholesterol and your fat, and there's a science behind it. There's also what is obviously very important for human beings for longevity is connection, feeling connected, feeling like they have connection and that they're loved.
It's like Avatar, bro.
Yes, yeah. It is. And I'm a Na'vi.
I think it's just because they're so happy they get to fuck Asian women. So that's why, in, you know, all these different places, the hottest women, the happiness. And
you like Asian women?
Yes. A lot of Asian.
That's a terrible theory, bro.
Actually, I believe it's just lean fish. Because don't you always
think health, like that? Health definitely has something to do with it. You know, diet has something to do with it. Yeah. You know, and Italians, a lot of parts of Italy, they eat a lot of seafood, a lot of fish, a lot of fresh fish.
It's a lot of vegetables. For you.
Not anymore. Yeah, they,
what we think of as American Italian food, like meatballs and sausages and stuff like that. I mean, they have that in Italy, but that's not really Italian food. Right. A lot of Italian food is seafood.
Right.
There's like Il Grano, that place you took us to. Brian introduced me to this really great restaurant in it's in Santa Monica or West LA?
It's in West LA, on West Purdue LA. In Santa Monica, called Il Grano.
Great restaurant. And the dude goes to the fish market every morning at 6 o'clock in the morning and gets what's fresh.
It's unbelievable.
He's a bad motherfucker. What's his name?
Sal Marino.
Yeah, and he has these like 9-course dinners. If you got the cheddar, if you could afford this shit, son.
Yeah.
Crazy expensive.
God, it's expensive. It's expensive. But you know what? It is an experience.
The dude is
it's
like an artist. The dude's an artist.
He's a maestro.
He goes to the fish market. He prepares all the meals himself. He's fanatical. The dude's dedicated to it. Comes over to the table, introduces himself, talks to you, chats to you, explains to you what each different thing is and why they're together, because this gives you one certain kind of taste, and this, like, you know,
he's got he grows I think 36 different kinds of tomatoes in his yard. He's a maniac.
Yeah, he's a,
he's a nut.
What's the name again?
He lives for food and lives for the details.
It's called Il Grano.
Il Grano.
I-L-G-R-A-N-O.
Yeah, it's on Purdue and Santa Monica Boulevard.
Badass
in West LA.
You know, that's one of the things about watching that Anthony Bourdain show. I've always loved good restaurants, but I never really understood, like, what was going on behind the scenes until I watched his show.
Really?
And I was like, wow, what a fucking... Like, he would bring you backstage to where all the Mexicans are, and he's like, you know, he was in New York City, and he's like, this is the backbone of all the best restaurants, all the best chefs. He goes, they're these Mexican guys.
Dude, they work so hard.
Yeah, and
they were guys work so hard.
Super expensive restaurants.
I don't know what it is in the culture, like, well, Mexican culture, but I really have always been so impressed with how hard these dudes work.
They bust their ass.
People are like, oh, I am anti-immigration. Dude, these guys work their ass off, man.
They're nice people, too, man. You know, look, Mexicans in L.A., you know, you're not going to have any more, like, assholes in the Mexican community per capita than you would in the white community or the black community.
Of course not.
There's always assholes per capita.
Yeah.
You know, and I know a lot of cool Mexicans, man.
Yeah, man, me too.
I love Mexican food. I'm not really into the music. They can keep that music. You keep that mariachi.
I would have to. I
love you. Your food is awesome. Your people are cool as fuck. You know, you made the best boxers ever. All my favorite boxers. Julio Cesar Chavez, my number one favorite boxer of all time. Mexican.
Yeah. You know? Did you ever see a movie called Amoros Perros?
You know what? I have that on DVD. That's one of those.
It's one of my favorite movies.
Bought and never watched.
That's one of my favorite. Written and directed by a Mexican guy, Guillermo something.
I think.
Who did Pan's Labyrinth, I think.
Passion of the Christ cured me of anything with subtitles.
Oh, just, no, dude, you got to see
it. I know. It's a great movie, I'm sure.
You'd love it, man.
Yeah. He did, what other movie did he do?
He did Pan's Labyrinth,
yes.
I think.
Oh, that's Guillermo del Toro, then.
Yeah,
dude, Pan's Labyrinth is a badass.
He's a
Although,
badass.
I did not like his book, man. I read his book, The Strain.
I didn't read it.
Oh, it was so disappointing, because it started out so badass. It's a vampire book, and it starts out where it's plane lands, and everyone on the plane is dead. They've all been jacked by a vampire.
Wow.
And the vampire flew in from another country and killed everyone on the plane and landed the plane. And they couldn't communicate with the plane and they didn't know what the fuck to do. It starts out badass. Where you're like, whoa, where's this going? But at the end of the book, it's like, and then he killed this one and this one came out and he killed him. It's like almost like they ran it. Like, let's just finish this fucking book. It's stupid.
Right, vampires on a plane.
I would love it if they rewrote. I really wish they would go back and pick up where you got in like 30-40% in. Let's try it again. Let's try the end again. Let's try another ending.
What was the movie? It was the one movie that scared the shit out of you more than anything else.
The Blair Witch Project scared the fuck out of me,
When it first came out,
twice. Two times. Two times. The first time it scared me is because me and Chris McGuire went to go see it in Houston, Texas. We were performing at the Laugh Stop, and these dudes who worked across the street at the movie theater came over to the show, and this was like pre-Fear Factor. You know, I was on news radio. Very few people really knew who I was, but I had a good following in Texas for some strange reason. And these guys came over after the show and go, "Hey, man, you want to go watch the Blair Witch Project? We work at the movie theater. We'll turn it on. We'll all go hang out there." And we're like, "Fuck it. Yeah, let's go." So me and Chris McGuire go across the street with these two dudes and this dude's girlfriend and watch the Blair Witch Project at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday night after the midnight show. And it was fucking scary, yeah, man. Because first of all, it was scary because I didn't know what this movie was about. I didn't know if it was a hoax. I didn't know. I'm sensing bullshit. I'm sensing acting. I go, this is not real. They're not trying to say this is real. Like, I knew almost nothing about
it. That witch,
I just heard
that witch, that woman, yeah, they see.
Dude, it was fucking scary. It was scary. Yeah. I mean, it was obviously, I was laughing.
See, the problem
was, like,
is I saw that.
I know it was bullshit.
Video when everybody told me it was bullshit. You know?
No.
That was the
first time it scared me. The second time it scared me is when I took, I don't remember who I was dating at the time, but I took this girl to go see it with me. And when I took her to go see it with me, it was Jessica. And as we were watching it, there was a dude who had his kid there, and his kid was making so much fucking noise. And the kid was like five or six.
I don't know why people
like
bring their kids to those movies.
And so I shushed him. I'm like, shh. And this Mexican dude freaked the fuck out on me. And he's like, "Motherfucker, don't shush my kid, motherfucker. You know, fucking bitch, straight up bitch. I'll kick your ass, bitch." And I'm like, "Oh, what are we going to deal with here? What the fuck am I going to deal with here?" So you know what I did? I said nothing. I just looked at the dude and said nothing. And I tried to think about what's going to happen here. Is this guy going to have a gun? What have I put myself in? What kind of a situation am I putting myself
into?
Yeah,
best case scenario, you have to beat him up in front of his kid.
This guy was
suck.
Yelling at me, you know, and it was wild. Like, so he didn't give a fuck that there's hundreds of people in this movie theater. Like, that's the craziest thing about LA. Like, you never know when you're going to run into someone who's completely out of their fucking mind.
Yeah,
and with his kid, and people with their kids are crazy, man.
Yep.
And this dude, I was looking at him, he's like all fleshy and chubby. I'm like, this is not like a dude who wants to fight. It's like a dude who wants to shoot me. You know, that's a scary thing about how many people in LA have guns. And the type of person who will just come at you that aggressively out of nowhere.
Yeah. Right.
You know, when you look, it's his fault. Okay. If that was me and my kid was, and someone went, shh, I'd been like, sorry. Come on, let's go. We got to go. We got to take you out of here until you calm down.
Right.
But this motherfucker.
Not a very rational guy.
This motherfucker yelled at me, man. It was like, whoa, this is not good. So that's then I was scared twice by the Blair Witch Project. That's the second time.
That is the
second time,
living,
much scarier.
You know, right?
Like every time I thought about that movie, I thought about
dude,
that dude.
I saw a shooting. I was on Vermont. I was on Vermont, literally like right near the one of the. 10.
You actually saw the shooting happen?
Saw the shooting. I was in traffic. It was like about 4 p.m. And these dudes get out of a car and go goo 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 goo, and he empties a Glock into this other car, misses the car.
Oh my!
And then he
God.
Stands there and looks. And I remember never he had his glasses, his sunglasses on the back of his head, and he stands there and looks, and he's looking like that, and he just casually walks back, and I go, holy shit. I'm like, watch this. I'm stuck in traffic when this happens. I turn and a cop is right next to me. And I go, did you see that? And the cop goes, what? And I go, that guy just emptied his clip. That car there emptied his clip into that car. The dude had come around this way and went off. And the guy goes like this. The cop goes, over there? I go, yeah. And he goes, right, and he grabs a thing, and then the traffic's starting to move, and I'm like, do you want to go ahead? And
so had he not seen it, or was
he
just...
see it, and he was right next to me, and the guy emptied the clip, but, you know, outside...
How did he not
hear it? It sounded like, boom, 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 but, you know, you figure, is it construction? And I turn, I see a guy emptying a gun.
Wait a minute. A cop should know what a goddamn gun sounds like.
I bet you he didn't
he was
hear
just...
It.
He
I bet
had
you
Bluetooth
his window
on,
was,
probably.
Window rolled up, he's, you know, oh. Hear, you know, you don't hear
You know
that.
What, yeah, especially if he's listening
and,
to the
and
radio.
Traffic and it's really
up.
Loud, yeah.
Yeah.
And the dude just emptied the clip right there, and they got away, no problem. I kept driving, and then he kind of pulled the other way, and I was like, "Well, there."
So
it goes.
They completely got away.
They completely got away. But you know,
how
anyway,
much investigation do you think is done? To
zero.
That? Really?
I was.
They got to file a report.
There's too many people out here. Like when I was talking about that purse thing, and all the cops came, they're like, "Well, so you got the license plate number?" And I gave it to him, and he goes, "Yeah, didn't come up with anything."
Yeah,
I'm like, "Well, two of us." two people sell the license plate number, couldn't you use like typing in a computer and go, all right, white Mazda, you know, these are all the white Mazdas match with five of the letters, you know, or something like that. You know what I mean?
Do you know how crimes are still?
They're not going to do any of that.
You know how the majority of crimes are still solved?
How?
Almost all of them. It's never CSI work. It's confessions.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Still. Confessions and human interaction and getting and cops who are really good at getting people to just feel safe and saying, look, you felt first they empathize, you know.
They should just give them ecstasy. I bet everybody would confess. Just,
exactly.
I'm serious. Give prisoners ecstasy.
Yeah.
Just hit them up with two tabs.
It wouldn't stand up in court, though.
We need to change the court then.
Yeah.
We need to change that.
You can give them sodium pentothal.
Anything that you say under ecstasy, if you're on ecstasy, you're going to tell the truth.
There are drugs that are better than that, though.
Are they?
Oh, yeah. Way better.
Yeah, but they don't make you feel good. You make someone feel good, they're more likely to tell you everything.
Sodium pentothal will make you just relaxed or something.
If it did, then people would take it at raves.
Good point.
They would have sodium pentothal set up at raves.
Not
believe me, man.
You're right.
Ecstasy is the shit.
But after I saw that shooting, I remember I was really depressed. And for 3 days, I said to my buddy, I go, I don't know, man, I feel depressed or something ever since I saw that shooting. And my buddy goes, yeah, you're supposed to. That's normal to feel really like scared and depressed when you see like somebody
try to
kill someone else.
You know, they prescribe ecstasy for people that have got post-traumatic stress disorder.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's one of the things that they say that it's a beneficial thing. By the way, I think I only took ecstasy once. It's just specified. I've said this before.
I've taken it twice.
Scary. I would never do it again. I did not like how I felt the next day. I was so dumb. I couldn't read. I literally couldn't read.
I got
a
cold.
Like, this is terrible for your body. What I'm doing, that was not like mushrooms or anything where I got something out of it, but my body felt almost better and like more energized. You know, you got to go through a mushroom trip, you feel good at the end of it, and you feel a little exhausted, but you feel good, like physically you feel like you've lost a lot of stress, you know.
Did they used to prescribe it for, or they don't do it now still?
No, you know what, people have done therapeutic tests using it, you know, and there's a lot of evidence that it helps people with all sorts of things in their life and their past dealing with things. What does even better is Ibogaine is this thing. My friend Ed Clay was just telling me how it changed his life. Mm. Ibogaine is this this drug that is illegal in America but legal in Mexico. So a lot of people go down to Mexico to take it, and they have these Ibogaine therapy places where they're like some incredibly high percentage, over 80% successful in curing people of opiate addiction with virtually no hangover.
Wow.
Like literally rewires your entire brain. It's supposed to be like one of the most intensely introspective experiences a human being could go through. Like my friend Ed said that it was like he relearned his whole life, like literally went back over things that he did when he was a child and things that his father said to him that when he was young that
a
made him today.
So.
But graphically, you know, in like high detail, like you're watching it in a film. And, you know, and brilliantly demonstrates all the areas in your life where you're behaving and acting in a certain way. And what this addiction really is some sort of a hole in the way, you know, your mind has been wired. And it almost like sets everything, resets everything, and lets everything jingle into place. And you get a much better map of what your mind is and how your mind works. And it's like hugely successful in curing people of heroin addiction.
Wow.
It's illegal in this country, but he said it completely changed his life. He started thinking about how, you know, his relationships with his family and all his childhood shit, and just saved the way he thinks. So he just feels so much more loving and friendly and cool and kind. He had like an air of relief about him. It was really kind of cool.
That's wild.
Yeah. Illegal in America. Yeah. Why would you want to get enlightened? We don't have room for that. No, we got room for Big Macs. You know, we got no room for enlightenment. There are a million people going to see Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin at the fucking Washington Monument on the eve of the Martin Luther King I Have a Dream speech. We have no room for enlightenment. We don't have any room for you here. You can do that in Mexico if you like. If you want to deal with the drug cartels, you know, they behead people.
You know those guys.
Go ahead. Go down there and see
God. You know that humanitarian bunch.
Yeah, you want to go down there and see God? Mexicans have been rocking it for a long time, man. Mexicans were rocking it in mushrooms way before we figured it out.
Well, it's like peyote. When Joseph Campbell wrote this book about why peyote came into existence, and when the Native Americans, the peyote Indians, were losing all their land, and including even, you know, their animals. The mythology was all wrapped up in the buffalo and the animals around them. And when when, you know, we went through that in the 80s, I mean, in the 1800s, when they were essentially laying the railroad and shooting all the buffalo and lacing the body with strychnine, all the other animals would eat it. And you had 500 million animals, they think, probably died in the space of 20 years. It used to look like the plains of Africa. And when the peyotes realized that their everything that their mythology, think about this, all your whole mythology, everything that you base your culture on is the animals themselves
out
are gone.
Two generations.
It was 20 years. It was 20 years. And when that happens on such a drastic level, they started taking the peyote to go within their consciousness to find that nostalgia for something that's beyond themselves.
Wait a
minute.
So peyote use only started when...
Only started in the 1800s with the peyote Indians.
Really?
That's
fascinating. I did not know that.
That's according to Joseph Campbell.
That is fascinating.
Yeah. Now, but indigenous people have always taken various. I'm sure the peyote knew about that particular. Maybe it was just for the shaman.
Mexicans were they had shamans and they were big with cubensis mushrooms thousands of years ago. They've had those for a long
time. Human beings have always,
most fascinating thing to me about Mexico is how there are like 1,000 Mayan temples they believe that have not been discovered. Like they'll go digging up apartment buildings and shit in Mexico City. They're like, you know, replacing something, they knock something down, and then they have to stop because they find a Mayan temple.
That's wild. Like,
that's no bullshit,
that's
man.
That's amazing.
How crazy that is. They have fucking Mayan temples and they find them when they're digging up like apartment buildings. Like one of the most complex and bizarre cultures to ever exist.
Yeah.
They used to play football with human heads. They made these incredible fucking geometric patterns for structures, yet they didn't even invent shoes. They had complex calendars that mapped out their solar system and predicted solar and lunar eclipses.
That's wild.
The fucking dude, man. And then they just disappeared. It's
was that
crazy?
They don't even know because of plague, or
they don't know. They don't know. Yeah. They don't know. You know, and they know that they used to have a lot of shit written on paper, but it's very difficult to find. It's like the way Mayan language is written too. It's very difficult to decipher because like a word to them or a symbol to them actually means a sound. You know, so Terrence McKenna described it. He said that if you said like I saw Aunt Rose, you would have to have an eyeball, a saw, an ant, and a rose.
Oh, wow.
And so that's how you would say, I saw Aunt Rose.
Wow. So it was all phonetic.
Yeah, so all these little different dudes, little different characters, these weird fucking things that they would draw, and they would put them all together, they all meant different sounds. So then you had to figure out, like, okay, it means a certain word, and how's it go with this
one? In a way, though, you could almost say that's the same thing with actually... any language.
Yes, but it's pictures. They're drawings.
Okay, yeah.
You know, they're weird. I mean, there's little dots and stuff. There's certain things that they use to figure out dates. But a lot of it is like these weird depictions. You know, a fucking moon with an eyeball and a snake. And, you know, these things all mean different things. It's very strange, man.
Damn. That'd be really difficult.
They have this crazy, complex society.
Where's the Rosetta Stone for that? Yeah.
Living in the jungle. This weird society that was mapping out the heavens. You know, I mean, think about that back in the hunter-gatherer days.
Sometimes I wonder, though, if that's a product of not so much a culture, but a set of circumstances. For example, like why did Socrates and Plato and Aristotle and come out of Greece? How did Greece become this source of a hub of civilization? And where the great questions were asked.
Their stuff came from Egypt.
Well, no, not just that, but the idea was that Greece was a country that, because they could export timber, olive oil, and wine, they could actually, they didn't have to live on a subsistence level, so they had 3 months of the year to just sit back and kind of hang out.
And think about things.
Wow. So cultures that had the luxury of being able to sell or not only their merchandise or create a system where they could actually be wealthy
surplus.
Enough. Yeah. They had time to sit back and actually think about things. So you probably in Mayan culture had a similar situation where 4 or 5 or 6 or maybe, you know, whatever geniuses were given room to flourish. I'm sure geniuses are born all the time, but they're just not in circumstances where they can flourish or have opportunity. And this was a culture that allowed for that. And they came up with, you know, it takes one great mathematician to change everybody's whole world, right?
Yeah.
It takes one genius architect.
Tesla comes up with 100 inventions that fix
changes
everything.
And gives rise to all the other scientists who piggyback on that.
So many people don't even realize. If it wasn't for Nikola Tesla, we'd probably be living back like they were in the 70s. We'd probably be few decades
behind. I've heard he was the great genius.
Dude, he's the craziest wizard ever, man. Yeah. What an insane inventor that guy was. Yeah, I mean, there's been a bunch of guys who changed culture like that, but I wonder if that's what it was, whether it was like some super group of Mayans that were like super intelligent, and then eventually they died off, and the culture died off.
Look at the founding fathers. I mean, the idea that those guys wrote the Constitution, a bunch of men in their 30s, that's incredible.
It is an incredible thing.
That document in the Federalist Papers, one of the great ideas of philosophy, you're talking about men who, in their 30s who solved the political problem.
Yeah, they tried to keep it
together. They solved politics.
They came here from another fucking country that sucked.
I know.
Decided to start another country, start over,
and they solved. Really they solved the political problem. They created the Constitution. They created the greatest government, and you know, because you know why? It was based on freedom,
yeah.
And like you were talking about, it was based on freedom for the individual, and it wasn't based on government bureaucracy. Government was a necessary evil.
Do you think that it's possible to get back to that? Is it possible?
Look,
it's not possible if all these people are buying into Sarah Palin and Glenn
Beck.
Look,
I think it's possible for the idea, and it's very resilient and strong in America. Culture still, and it's part of the American spirit, the concept and the idea that I, as an individual, have protection to speak my mind, to gain profit from my own ingenuity and my own risk-taking, to worship or say what I want, as long as it doesn't, you know, incite a riot or whatever, etc., etc. Those kinds of things, I think, are very strong, and I think this country has always swayed from one extreme to the other, or somewhere in the middle. I mean, there are always trends that push toward the left, trends that push us toward the right. I think the issue now is that you have so many people who, for such a cheap price, can get on TV, and if they got a good speaking voice or a sharp profile, or they say things that are inflammatory, you got enough people where shit is changing so quickly today. A lot of people are just afraid at how fast things are changing, especially technology. You're going to have people who want to get back to the old way of living,
yeah.
The status quo, God, guts and guns, whatever it might
be. They want to go back to a John Wayne movie.
Yeah, so it doesn't surprise me that when my boy Glenn Beck says, we're bringing our country back to God, people go, that's the nostalgia. I remember the 50s or the, you know, whatever it might
that
be.
Dude,
let's get back to basics. Human beings have always been that way.
Wrote that shit and allowed for a pause. After God.
He's a performer.
Okay. Yeah.
He's an actor.
And he's like, okay, God, when I say God, that's going to get them. That's going to get them. They're going to be clapping then. Okay, so I'll take a deep breath.
Sure.
Dramatic pause. Go.
Exactly. It's all the music.
But it's unfortunate that it works, man. It's unfortunate. We
same
need to
reason,
get
same reason
the population on mushrooms. We need to get this population on mushrooms.
Hey, drugs are where I draw the line, Buster.
Listen, I draw the line with drugs as well. I think that's the line. Take drugs. Someone needs to fucking show
you
some shit.
You've got to be an example to the kids, man.
Listen, I'm not saying everybody should do drugs. What I'm saying is some people should do drugs.
What's your thought on this? What's your thought on not only steroids in sports, but the idea that technology is going to allow us to start doping our genes and all that stuff? What do we do about
that? Myostatin inhibitors. What are you going to do when that happens?
I don't know.
The guy's got a super body.
I'm going to be looking like, I'll tell you who's going to be taking him.
Yep.
This guy.
You look like Conan. You're going to look like Conan.
That's right.
You're going to grow your hair long. I'm going to get
correct.
My armpit hairs fucking tattooed.
Now they're
going
to be able to clone hair. That's what I want. And I want them to genetically engineer it. I want a horse tail.
Just clone me a whole new scalp. This shit's useless.
Give me a horse tail.
Get me a new one. This one's a mess.
Just upload your brain into somebody else's body.
You think that's going to be able to be possible?
I think so.
Merge definitely. Brains, maybe?
I think
and
we're
going to someone runs amok and starts deleting files, some crazy bitch. You let her in your brain.
Well,
she's deleting your childhood. Fuck your childhood. I'm what matters. I'm what matters.
Flush. They say they're going to be able to reverse engineer the brain. The learning how the brain deals.
I believe that.
And then
I
you're going to be able to tap into somebody else's brain through a net. You'll have other experiences.
Why wouldn't you be able to?
You'll be able to experience what it's like to be somebody else.
That's not nearly as crazy as it is to send a picture through the air to someone in Australia.
Right.
But you can do that right now.
Isn't that crazy?
It's beyond. It goes over the ocean.
It's
it
magic.
Takes like 11 hours in a plane to go where that fucking
it's wild.
That picture
crack up
goes in a couple of seconds.
Yeah, it's why people who aren't scientifically minded, who don't believe in the scientific process and stuff, always crack me up. It's like, you benefit
from
that
every day. Who
doesn't
believe in the scientific
you
process?
You hear about that stuff all the time. Talk
there's
about
some
somebody-
people that think that science is arrogant because it doesn't consider some things like astrology psychic people
but
with,
there's no way to scientifically prove that
right.
astrology
well
works.
Science can only
yes.
prove something that happens over and over again and you can measure it, you know.
Exactly.
I mean that's what it's all about.
Exactly.
You
but
know,
we benefit
doesn't
so
discount.
Greatly from that.
Yeah.
And
I
so
mean,
to not
you,
to not to
both.
Not apply it to everything, you know.
But it's both.
I have
you know?
To pee out of my pee hole.
You can go right over there.
Dude,
there's a bathroom
bubble.
Right in
I'm
this
good.
Direction.
Faster at it, but.
A lot of cords around here. This is very unprofessional, ladies and gentlemen. We apologize. Brian, do you have a song that can take us through this moment? Well, how come No, we don't have to play the song. Just go in there and pee, bro. We're going to come up with topics to talk about when you get back.
Just make a pee-pee.
No, no song. We don't need any song, bro.
All right.
So what would you have done if that guy stopped and ran after you? The guy that you chased after when he – you saw – for people who didn't hear earlier, Brian saw someone trying to steal someone's purse. The guy ran away, and Brian chased after the dude.
Well, the problem is I just wasn't fearful of him because if he was an Indian. I have no idea why. Like, I mean, swear to God, if
dude,
he
you
was –
you have Indian dudes all over the country that want to beat your ass.
I know,
right,
but
now.
I'm just –
Russell Peters is going to throw a beating on you next time he sees
yeah,
you.
Yeah, like, do you – like, Russell Peters mad at you. Would you be – I don't know.
Russell Peters, I bet he's got a good jab.
I just think, you know, even their movies, like they're like Hollywood movies that Indian people do, like the main stars are like ridiculous. Like,
well, India has
guys.
A bunch of badass wrestlers.
Do they?
Yeah, India has a lot of badass wrestlers, yeah. There's a bunch of people that were working on the big giant skyscrapers in Dubai.
Right.
And this was another Anthony Bourdain show. And while they're working, when they have days off, they wrestle in the park. And they like wrestle for money. And they're like these badass wrestlers.
Like,
so that Indian would fuck you up, son. That's what I'm trying to say.
It's not in their culture or something.
Yes,
or maybe I'm just so used to that video, that little superstar.
There's Indian martial arts, especially wrestling, that goes back way a long time in their culture.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know that video of that little Indian guy that's like a midget, though? That's
yeah,
pretty cool.
The superstar?
Yeah.
Little superstar? Let me see that. If you haven't seen that, who's hasn't seen
that? That's why I'm not...
That's one thing. What does that have, a billion hits on it? How many hits does that have?
15 billion?
15 million?
Million?
15 million. That's just because that's only this copy of it. There's 100 right. million versions of it on YouTube.
Dude, that's why I'm not scared of Indian guys. Like, all these guys that are in this video right here, are you scared of any of these guys?
Well, Indian people are pretty peaceful considering
yeah,
there's a billion of them.
It's like their culture's not...
But they don't get along with those Pakistanis very well. Hold on. Right. Did you shut off his
yeah,
volume?
While he was getting up and...
Oh.
I guess you didn't, you've never met any Sikhs.
Yeah, he's trying to tell me that that Indians aren't scary. Yeah. Indians would beat your ass, son.
Sikhs, first of all, are big people.
Have you ever seen this video?
They're meat eaters.
That's why I'm not scared.
Have you seen this video before?
No.
You haven't?
No, that's genius.
Wow, I thought everybody's seen this.
Look at that little... Look at this, all happy Indian
guys. That's a, that's
wait,
a general
you really have never
that,
seen
that
this?
That guy's 30, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. Look at this. And they give the kids
voices.
Cigarettes, too. They give the kids cigarettes.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Kids smoking is a very fucking strange thing, man.
Especially that one kid. Did you see that?
The two-year-old?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's chimps.
How have you never seen this video?
I know. This Brian. Is like the internet was made
I'm worried about
the same
you,
day as this video.
Oh, my God. It's genius.
And now he works as like a choreographer in India.
Does he?
Yeah. I watched the show on him. He was like teaching people how to dance in this... one movie or a video or something like that.
Was he a famous guy or something?
Yeah, yeah, a little superstar.
Now,
I think that's his name.
Where's, he's not the same guy as the other guy that played like a detective in India? The little
no, guy? No, that's another dude. That was I think that dude was from the Philippines.
Oh, from Philippines.
Yeah,
ah.
It was a crazy.
See, in my head, they're all Indian. So
a little so tiny, surreal, a little man. Little person who flies through the air and kicks dudes in the head and fucks them up. The internet, man. The internet gets exposes you to some shit that you would just when
really
we were kids
does.
Growing up. Kids today, man, you'd be a 15-year-old boy today. What kind of shit are you getting into
that's,
your brain?
That's actually a worry, I think.
Fuck it is. They're the, yeah, they're growing up the most difficult generation to grow up ever. Young kids today. And with some of the most ridiculous influences. Like, when I was a kid, there was no Kardashians. There was no Paris Hilton. There was no ridiculous people who were famous for doing nothing. You know, and so much attention was paid to them. And I'm not hating. You know, if you can get it, good. Good for you, man. You know, why not? Yeah. You do a reality show about your life and drive around a Bentley.
It's
just
that's a form of voyeurism, maybe.
But,
maybe
oh, yeah,
there's always going to be
voyeurism. You know, we talked about it maybe possibly even being therapeutic. But what I'm saying is we were never exposed to anything that ridiculous as a role model. We were never exposed to anything, you know, that strange where all these people are paying attention to it. I was listening to Nancy Grace talk about Paris Hilton. I had to stop my car, and I'm like sitting in my car shaking my hand. Nancy Grace is mad because Paris Hilton was pulled over with cocaine. She is a repeat offender, and she is out on the streets. Would that be happening if it was you or I? And
it wasn't her purse, Joe.
I heard it wasn't even cocaine. She thought it was candy.
But that's so
she didn't even know when she threw it out the window.
She can't buy her own purses. She has to borrow purses.
Well, homeboy, her boyfriend was blowing weed out the window like a knucklehead.
Right?
And a motorcycle cop.
Who's her boyfriend now?
Oh, you are, Brian. You're going to move in and fix her.
Sure am.
Listen, Paris, you're a good person.
I like more than a skinny girl.
You just need to connect yourself with the right crowd. For in a few years, people forget.
She's bone thin, by the way. I don't find her attractive.
Would you fuck her or Lindsay Lohan?
Lindsay Lohan. Hahn in a heartbeat. She's got curves in a heartbeat.
And she's dirty.
It's my joke about Paris Hilton trying to have sex with a girl as skinny as like trying to take a nap in a wooden chair.
There's no girls that are built that way that aren't dirty. That girl's dirty. She's built to fuck.
Oh, yeah.
I shouldn't say that because she's a very young girl and she's got troubles.
No, she's not. She's 24 now.
So. She's a young girl and she has troubles, Brian.
Whatever.
Growing up, the creepy thing is when you see the photos of her when she was really young or video of her when she was like a Disney kid.
Right.
And it's
oh
like,
gosh.
Wow, this is strange. Like, this kid really did grow up in front of the camera.
Remember that she plays a twin and there's two of them?
Fuck, man. Good luck with that. Good luck with that. That girl, man. That's a whole pot of problems.
Well, you're growing up in imagine growing up in L.A. Is this being your reality? Like, I mean,
she was.
Look, Ricky Schroeder turned out well.
Ricky Schroeder,
that dude's
turned out
fucking
awesome.
Hilarious.
Yeah, man, he turned out awesome. He's really got his shit together for a guy who grew up a child star. I mean, it's very impressive. He's a really regular dude. He had an interesting way of putting it. He said he thought that he was a regular dude because he grew up famous. He doesn't have any point of reference. It's not like all of a sudden he became famous. Like, wow, I don't know how to handle
it
this.
Just, it was just weird. What it was.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And famous, by the way, means baby, famous means you just get recognized a lot in airports. And you know what I mean?
It means a lot more than that. It means people treat you different.
No, I'm saying as a person.
People communicate
as a person,
with you
know,
different. Yeah, but your model of the world is going to be all fucked up.
Because right.
you're going to start thinking that you're special.
You're treated like a prince.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, how many actors have you ever met on the sets, and we've talked about this, how goddamn infuriating it is that these idiots think that what they have to say and what they have to do is so important because of the fact that there's a camera on them and because of the fact that all these people are telling them how awesome they are because their job revolves around this person. So they start to believe it, and then they start to act it out, and then you come along and you have to meet this guy for the first time, and you're like, oh, this guy is in like the swirling fucking death throes of a 3-year bizarre trip through ego,
right,
and now
right.
I'm meeting him 4 years in. He doesn't even know how crazy he's acting.
Yeah.
Like, he's yelling at the fucking staff and yelling at the director and,
yeah.
you know, and doing cocaine before the scene. And
there goes his career.
I mean, come on, man. How many dudes have you seen, like, going through that death spiral?
I remember I did this show with this guy who's no longer around. He's such a nice guy, but he was so high. And he was doing so much blow, and he kept coming out of the trailer. We're trying to shoot the scene. And he was playing a cop, I think, and he had the guy in the chair. And the guy goes, and the line was, what? You better enunciate. I can't hear you too clearly. That's all he had to say. And he was so high on coke, he kept going, what? You better enunciate. I can't hear you. There's a cut. It's enunciate. He goes, what's that line? Yeah. All right. What? You better enunciate. And he did it 16 times.
Oh, my God.
And finally, like, why don't we move on? It's too high right now.
Oh, my God.
That was it, man. That guy would have been something. Nice guy.
You know, when I met you, you were on Mad TV, and that's also when I met Artie.
Oh,
you know, did you stay in touch with him? When
I
he
do.
Went to New York?
I just haven't. I haven't talked to Artie in probably 4 years now. But I mean, I always would run into him, and in fact, the other dude,
I always love seeing that guy.
You know what he said about me on Stern like about a year ago? My father called me up, or 2 years ago. The best guy I've ever seen with women. I've never seen anybody better with women than Brian Callen or something like that on Howard
strong.
Stern. So I got 50 calls. My dad's like,
strong.
Why is this guy saying you're a stud with women? What is it?
He's a good dude, man. I would run into him like every couple of years somewhere. Like, I ran into him at the Aspen Comedy Festival, I think, and I ran into him once in Vegas.
He's a
just
crazy,
run into
great
him.
Guy.
Crazy great. Just such a nice human being.
He truly is a nice human being.
Yeah,
and he's just hilarious. He's just tortured.
Yeah, just real tortured.
I mean,
you know, and I felt like almost like, you know, exposing all that and, you know, and talking about it all the time, it became worse, you know?
Well, what happened? Do you know how he's doing now? Or?
I don't know. I don't know anything. Hmm. Just, you know, I remember feeling really sad when I heard that, you know, that he could get to that place where he could do something.
I think it's always hard when somebody suffers from that kind of, that level of despair.
Yeah.
And it must be really, really hard on, like, you know, you're like, if you have a child who's that way and you can't do anything to help him.
I ran into a dude who is friends with Artie. I don't know if it was his assistant at the time or someone who worked with him. And this dude, like, I guess he lived in the same apartment building as Artie. And he was talking to me about it just years and years ago about how, you know, he really worried about Artie and, you know, he didn't know what to do. And, you know, he wanted other people to talk to him, and but nobody knew what to say. And it's like, it's a terrible feeling to have a friend. I've had many friends who had serious drug problems and got real depressed. My friend Johnny, used to have heroin problems, coke problems, crack problems. You'd have everything. My friend Johnny, he was a great guy.
It's
but
amazing
he was,
how charming those
he was a street hustler, criminal, yeah. fucking pool hustler. Like if you told him that story about the dude throwing the jacket over the purse, he'd be like, "Oh, that's a strong move, strong move." Johnny was like this big, fat, funny Jackie Gleason type character who was like, you know,
how'd he die?
Some sort of an aneurysm, drug related.
Yeah,
or we suspect drug related. I mean, he had like a real problem. He had a real problem for a long time. He would go one to the other, and
yeah, there's some drugs like meth and blow. It's like you never. And like my friend was like, nobody's ever said I had all these problems and I did a bunch of meth and it got a lot better. That's never how it's worked out.
He came out here to stay with me when I first got a TV show. I was on when I was on Hardball. He came out here to stay with me to try to clean up. He came out here for 2 weeks, and for the first week, he was trying to, you know, he didn't have any access to heroin. I don't know if he brought any with him or not, but it seemed like the first week he didn't have any access to it, and he just, all he would do is sleep. He just could not get up. I'm like, dude, you came to visit me, and you're just fucking sleeping. And then I sort of realized what's going on. I'm like, okay, you're kicking some shit right now.
Is that
what you're doing?
Some shit, yeah.
And you know, and he didn't want to talk about it. He'd be like, yo, I'm just not feeling that good. I don't know what's up. You know, he would like lie about it. You know, I'd be like, dude, you're fucking like death. Like, do you need to go to a hospital? Like, no, I'm gonna be good. You just need some soup or something, maybe we got any soup. And he would like have a cup of soup and then go to sleep. He did this for like 7, 8, 9 days. And he stayed with me for a while. Wow. And then finally he got I flew him out here. Because, you know, I wanted to see him, and the plan was, you know, I'd known him from back in the pool hall days, and he was a really good pool player. And we used to go on these gambling matches where I would take him to pool halls and I would match him up in games. It was a lot of fun, you know, and it wasn't for a lot of money. We'd do it for like $100 or something like that. But it was just exciting. You know, he had a chance to win $100. I had a chance to watch some great pool action between two dudes who were really nervous trying to win money. And, you know, we would set up games. And sometimes we would win money. It was a lot of fun. So the plan was, and I'm like, dude, I've been playing out here in California. There's a lot of guys who like to gamble. So you can get some good games. It'll be a lot of fun. Let's do this. And I think there's a lot of guys you match up with. All right. I'm on my way, bro. We're going to have a good time. And he got out here just the moment he landed. He looked like a gray toilet paper roll.
He was probably doing meth.
I don't know what he was doing. I think it was heroin. He was gray.
Because I dated a girl, the same thing. She'd show up in New York, and she looked like gray, and she'd sleep for 4 days.
I think that's a lot of things.
I didn't know anything about drugs, though. I didn't know that was going on. I wasn't drug savvy. I didn't know from heroin.
So sad.
Or iron deficiency people. A lot of prejudice.
That's a lot of
the story about my friend Johnny, though, is he, after 9 days, he finally... came out of it like 7, 8, 9 days, something like that. I slowly started coming out of it, and I started taking him around, and we had a good time. It was like one of the last good times before he died. We took him into it. There was a place called Players Billiards in the Valley,
and
it was
a
24-hour place. We were out there gambling till like 4 o'clock in the morning.
You and I were eating at Chaya when the day you found out he died. Yeah. We went out.
Yeah, it was sad. You know, he was a fascinating human being, man. I've met a lot of fascinating human beings, but, you know, every now and then there's a dude who's in the wrong place. You're like, what are you doing here? What's going on here? What the fuck? Like this super, super smart dude, like really smart. Like you could throw numbers at him, like 396 minus 7 divided by 4, 262. He would just bang it out, like literally that fast. Wow. Mathematical genius. Could play chess in his head. You could talk to him, and he could play chess like they do in prison. Knight to rook 5, you know, he could do that. And he barely played chess. He was just like a mathematical genius. The reason why he was so good at pool, he was like mathematical, like geometry and shit to him, just would like play itself out in his mind. He would look at a pool table and he could like see the geometry. He could see all the angles. He didn't have to break it down one to another. He's like, oh yeah, I'm out. I'll get there, do there, do there, I'm out. He would just see it, you know. But his only problem was the drugs. And his problem was he was kind of crazy, which is why he was so mathematically like connected to things. Yeah. And he played good music too. He could play piano, could play a bunch of different instruments.
Sounds like he's got
genius.
Like Asperger's syndrome.
Genius. Yeah. No, but a regular social guy, fun to hang out with. Yeah. Told jokes, cracked jokes. It wasn't like he had autism or anything. He was very social.
People like that, I'll take a colorful character like that with that kind of flavor over it.
Are you kidding me, man? Like my friend Joey Diaz.
Those people make your life. They make your life. Yes. He's the best.
He's the best.
Joey?
Yeah.
What a character. Every time I run into that guy, whether it's an audition or in the club, I'm never disappointed. He's always inspiring.
What are you doing, Tarzan?
He's inspiring. He's funny.
Yeah.
His stories, the way he walked, the way he talks, you just can't take your eyes off the
guy.
He's
a monster. He's one of the funniest human beings I've ever met in my life. He just makes me feel like there's a party going on.
Yeah.
You know, when Joey said, what's up, cocksuckers? What are we doing? Let's get this party started. And you're like, yep, the party just got started. The party just started. Joey's here.
He's great.
It really feels like something's going on now.
Is he
you
have
know?
A girl?
What's that?
Yeah, he's married.
Yeah, he's married, man. Yeah, his wife Terry's awesome. She was a waitress at the Comedy Store.
How's he doing? Is he doing the road?
Oh,
with
no,
you
I'm or? Sorry. She wasn't a waitress. She was an accountant.
Is he a draw now on the road? Or
he does well if he wants to. If he wants to go on the road, people want to see him. I'm trying to get him to do that. But, you know, Joey wants to get an acting gig. He's working real hard at, you know, nailing. I mean, he's a fucking hilarious actor. You know, so, you know, he was in The Longest Yard and stuff like that. He wants to get more, you know.
Yeah.
I think he would like a good TV show. He'd be fucking incredible.
I think voice of a cartoon would be amazing.
That
would
be good, too. Yeah, but no. He would be incredible on a sitcom. Joey could crush a sitcom.
Yeah, I agree.
Are you kidding that character? Or a drama, even, you know, as a funny guy and like a fucking.
No doubt.
Like
no
a,
doubt.
You know,
like an informant.
Like
know?
The Shield, like one of those kind of shows. Yeah. He could be genius on that. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of characters like that that you run into in life. You know, Joey has his shit together a million times more than Johnny did. I mean, Johnny was homeless most of the time I knew him, and, you know, he was sleeping in pool rooms and, you know, and just gambling and, you know, and trying to win money.
You know, you see people like that sometimes, and, you know, you go, it's not going to be a happy ending. You always kind of know.
Well, you know, he had an imbalance. There was some imbalance, and he self-medicated, you know. But I got to see, like, genius because of all his crazy flaws. It's like we were talking about that Robert E. Howard guy. That Robert E. Howard guy was so fucked up that he had to kill himself when he was, like, 30-something years old, but yet he was so brilliant, and so he had so much creativity. Wrote all this really fascinating shit, like in the 1950s, right?
You know,
there's people
it's like
that,
Stephen
right?
King was talking about how he doesn't remember writing Cujo. He doesn't remember writing the book because he was so drunk,
so
and
fucked
high.
Up, yeah.
And he said, you know, then his wife came in and she started putting all these beer cans in a bag, and he looked around and he goes, jeez, man, I drank a lot of beer over the past, you know, month. She goes, that was yesterday, dude. This is what you've been drinking in the past 2 days or whatever it was.
He would just black
he
the
was
fuck
like,
out.
What? He'd just keep drinking. And she goes, you drank this in 2 days. And it was a month's worth of, you know, beer. I mean, literally, she was going, filling garbage bags full of beer cans.
Whoa.
And he said, you know, I happen to have been a really, really imaginative writer who had a substance abuse problem.
So do you think that his like dealing with his substance abuse problem and then all the torture and you know of being an alcoholic and doing coke and all this turmoil in his head created all that horror?
He would say
like
no.
His own battles?
He in his book on writing said no.
Right, but
what he said was that in fact regardless if he had been sober, he would have had the same imaginative mind.
I believe that is not true. Yeah. This is why I believe that's not true. I think I've learned a lot about writing over the past, you know, few years of trying to write comedy and, you know, 20 plus years of writing, doing comedy. And one of the things that I give credit to substances. I think substances have a
whether
dramatic effect on your creativity. Yeah. You can't say that you would have come up with that on your own.
Well, caffeine for sure for me has a good effect, but
stimulant effect.
But you know, Nick Kent, who is a rock journalist, wrote a book called The Dark Stuff about that I read a while ago about rock and rollers. And he followed the Pogues and Lou Reed and the Stones and Zeppelin, everybody. And he wrote a book which actually said that most of those guys, and there's been a lot of like, there's some strong evidence to suggest that some drugs, yes, other drugs dull you. And heroin,
okay, but this is my point. Why he can't say that. First of all, because he wrote all this stuff when he was fucked up. That's why you can't say that he would have written it anyway. You cannot say that. You cannot say when you wrote something and you were fucked up, you cannot say you would have written it anyway. That doesn't make any sense.
But I wonder if they got there.
It
they
changes
got
the
to
way
that
you
level.
Think. The alcohol changes the way you think. Caffeine changes the way you think. Cocaine for sure changes the way you think. It's going to increase paranoia. It's going to make you – I mean you think about his most thrilling, horror-filled, psychotic shit was all from the time he was using.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but I mean
it was, right?
Nick Kent said that a lot of these guys got into drugs because a lot of their heroes were like, you know, drug addicts, like if the blues art guys
sure.
And he said, and a lot of those guys ended up, and Stanley Crouch said the same thing. He goes, a lot of these guys were subscribing to their heroes' lifestyles,
mm-hmm.
and you can actually see a fairly precipitous drop off on their productivity,
mm-hmm.
not when it came to weed. But when heroin
right.
and cocaine,
I absolutely really, agree. Well, however,
what happens is they become so all consuming that you end up doing that and not your work.
Yes, but I absolutely agree that there's a detrimental effect, especially with the ones like opiates and stuff that right. crushes your body. Very, very bad for your body.
Because you get into that more than you get into anything
yes,
else.
Yes, I definitely know? Agree. But I also think that we have to acknowledge that they're changing the way people think, the paths that you take, and your creativity. They change the direction. They change the enthusiasm behind things. They change the aggression behind things. Mm. And those change the road you go down when you're creating things.
And not only that, you know, as we learn more about our genomes and how different we are genetically, drugs have a vastly different effect on one person versus yes. another too.
Yeah, it's very important because I've talked to people about pot, even the kind of pot that I smoke, like the figure out the universe, you know, watch documentaries pot. That you know, sativas over the indicas rather. Some people will smoke a sativa and they're describing a completely different thing and they have a completely different effect.
Does sativa affect your mind more than
yes,
your body?
Yes. Okay. Well, it affects your body too. You know, it's still, yeah. all of them make sex feel better, baths feel better, showers feel better. All of them do that. It makes you more sensitive. The rewards for massages and stuff, like, I never get massaged unless I get high first. Except today because I knew it was going to be a dude rubbing me.
I was just going to say, yeah, what if it was a guy? Because I wouldn't be stoned with a
you
guy.
You don't want to be moaning.
I had to go
you
want
to be moaning when a dude is massaging
I hurt my back last week in jiu-jitsu and like a retard yesterday. I got adjusted and then I tried to roll last night and like halfway into the class, my back just fucking completely gave out where I couldn't stop anybody from passing my guard. I couldn't explode. I couldn't move. It was like just a constant pain. I was like, okay, I'm hurting myself here. I got to stop.
Yeah.
So I knew that I had to go and get some deep tissue to break up the right. scar tissue and shit. It's painful as fuck.
Why'd you
dude.
Have a guy though?
Because you have to get a dude to do it. First of all, they're sports dudes. This isn't like you don't go to a spa, go to a sports medicine center and they hurt you, bro. It yeah. fucking hurts. It's like there's this guy today was not as bad as the last guy I went to. The last guy I went to, I literally almost tapped out. The doctor, Dr. Spag, who's the main chiropractor, there, he told me he actually fainted. Like this guy hurt him so bad that he fainted.
Because
this mother is just
awesome.
He's
Did
just breaking down your world with his elbow. He's just digging
oh
into all
God.
Your injuries, and it's breaking up the scar tissue, literally tearing it open so that it can like breathe and get circulation
they
in there.
Lasers for that?
Did
man.
I ever tell you?
Dude, they don't though. They don't. You just don't. You have to take the pain.
I went to Brooks Massage, and it's on Beverly, and I go in there, and this Russian dude's there. He's like, please, you come here. And I'm like, oh, good. And I get on the slab, and I come out a new woman, right? Because he's hitting me literally. Was, and he was this bear of a man going, and I was like, oh. And I felt like such a girl. I literally grew bitch tits. I had estrogen running through my body. I was like this guy. Anyway, so it was great. So I go, I looked at him. I'm looking at him. I look at his body. I go, were you a sports guy? He goes, yes. I go, did you do any kind of fighting? Yes. I was judo. I go, judo. I go, did you compete? He goes, yes, everywhere. I have one gold medal from Sydney. I go, you were a gold medal, Olympic gold medal judo guy in Sydney? Yes. I go, that must have been a lot. This guy massaged me for $65. I go, that must have been a lot of training and stuff. Yes. Did you lift a lot? No. Just judo. That's all. He wouldn't give me anything. Dude. I was like, but dude, you're a gold medalist in judo. It's incredible. I know I'm a grappler. I know grappling. Nothing. He was like, yeah.
I got this deep tissue massage from this guy who's an expert in sports-related therapy for like muscle injuries and stuff like that. So he does a lot of range of motion things and a lot of resistance things.
Yeah.
Okay, so we had gone through this whole, it's like a half an hour massage of death, right? So we got to the end, and this is what he asked me in the end. He says, I want you to get on your knees, okay? Get in like a cat position, right here with your forearms like this.
Put some Vaseline on your ass.
This position and just hold yourself in that position. And I'm going to work your back. And this is what I want you to do. I want you to go down, okay? And then as you're resisting, you know, go up, okay? So he says this, right? And he's going to do this with his elbow. This is where he's really going to jack me. So as he's got me in this position, he goes, really into that MMA, you know? It feels like around maybe 35 years ago, I would have probably got into it myself, probably even competed. And he's like... He's got me on my hands and knees here. And he's telling me that he would, and he's bigger than me. He's a big old dude. He's a big old bear.
I'm gonna rest my cock between your butt cheeks. It's gonna feel weird,
and it hurts like a motherfucker. And he's getting me with his elbow. Maybe I would have competed. Maybe I'd have got in there.
Yeah, and he hates you. He has
to
hate you.
Maybe I take your back right now. I have to fucking massage you, you punk. And I'm younger than you, or I'm older than you.
Girl only.
I'm rubbing your back.
Girl only for massages.
He was a no. I'm making light of it, but he's a very important guy to know if you have muscle injuries. Those guys. They'll fix you up, man.
Really?
Yeah, because you get a knot when you get an injury, any tear, you get inflammation, you get tears, and those tears knot you up. And if you get an injury and you don't have it broken down and busted open like that, it's not going to heal right. You're going to lose range of motion.
Do they massage the actual? They do.
No, nothing works like this. You have to get in there physically. You have to feel it. You have to know where it is, and you have to break that shit up.
So they actually get on the actual injury.
Oh, yeah. They hurt you, son. They hurt you. They dig in. There's a guy I went to before. This guy was not as painful as the last guy I went to. But the last guy I went to fucking would get on. He was a strong yoga guy. Like, this guy does like power yoga and shit. He's strong as fuck. And he would get on top of you with your elbow, with his elbow rather, and just drive it into your spine. Ooh. Like right where that injury is, because I got this knot of scar tissue right next to my spine, and he's breaking it. And I can feel it fucking tearing. I'm like, argh! It's so it's so necessary, but so hard to take. Oh, you just want to run out of the room screaming. You want to go,
feel
I can't
better.
Take
you
it.
Feel better too.
Oh, yeah. Right after it's over, you're like, thank you.
I did prolotherapy in my neck. You ever done that?
Yeah, I've done that on my wrist. I've done it on my both knees.
I did it in my neck and it worked. But yeah. I do a lot of, I've been doing, this guy has been doing it.
Well, tell people what that is.
Prolotherapy is where they take dextrose and they shoot it into your muscle. And the reason they shoot dextrose with lidocaine, but they'll shoot dextrose in, and it's, dextrose is basically a sugar water. But when it coats the muscle, the body rushes healing agents to it because it views it as a foreign agent. So what it'll do is it'll actually inflame the area and create and rush healing agents to it.
It makes ligaments like 40% stronger.
It makes your ligaments stronger. Yeah. And muscles.
Up to 40% stronger, which is incredible.
It heals them. Yeah, yeah. It heals them.
I had it done. I've had wrist problems. I broke my wrist a long time ago, kickboxing in like 1989. I never did anything about it. I just dealt with it. And every now and then from jiu-jitsu, it'll start really hurting. It used to hurt when I played Quake. When I'd move it around too much with a mouse, I'd get like this pain.
Where you play it for 15
I think I tore
hours,
a ligament
like
in there or something. There's something wrong. It clicks a lot and shit. Yeah. There's something really wrong with it. But I had them do that in there. And then I had him do it in my knee. It makes
my lower back has always been, it always tightens up no matter what I do.
Well, you got to work on your flexibility, son.
Yeah, I do.
That's one of the most important things, man. Working on your flexibility, so important.
I do every day, actually. It's really important.
You got to see my garage, man. You haven't even seen my garage. No. Oh, you don't even know, son. All right, let's wrap this show up because we've been doing this for like 6 hours now, right?
Yeah, man.
Brian, how long have we been doing this?
2 hours and 20 minutes.
I wish we'd end on a bang. Bang! I got a good story?
Wish I could sing.
I'll have one next week.
Did I tell you my story? Did I tell you my story when I was on a date up in this area?
Were you on a date with a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu instructor?
No, with the girl where I had to poo. Where I had to poo now. I had to poo right now.
In the woods?
You ever been in the woods on a trail with a girl? You want to get laid? You want to bang like on a rock and you have to shit now?
Oh my God.
And you know what I did? I'm talking to her and I go, I have to shit now. In fact, I'm shitting now. I ran
you
away
shit
from
your
her.
Pants.
I ran away from her up the trail and I fucking hid. And I was like, I literally ran and I was like, and I got around and I was like, and I just shat. And I'm shitting and I'm like, how the fuck she's coming? She goes, what are you doing? Are you trying to scare me? And I go, yeah. I yank my shorts up. I start kicking dust over. And I go like this. I go, but then I don't want her to look down. So I go, hey! And she goes, what are you doing? I'm like, hey! Like that. Meanwhile, we're walking. I go, holy shit, thank God. That was the worst thing. I can't believe that.
God.
I got a parasite.
Did you wipe your ass at all?
I got a parasite. Wipe my ass. I didn't have time to do anything. I look at her and I go, oh God, guess what? I have to shit now again. I'm shitting now.
But after you shat, before you pulled your pants up, you just pulled your pants up.
This happened three times. It happened three times.
Three times the same day?
Same day. I go, holy shit, thank God we got over that. And then I go like this. I go, anyway, and I'm like, I'm talking to you and I'm shitting again. I go like, the third time, I don't get all the way around. I pull my hand off and I go, and you hear, oops, just air.
Oh.
My ass, my legs are full of shit. I go, I take dirt in the bag and I wipe it on my ass. Yeah, because I heard that's what they did in the desert. So I'm trying to get off. She stops and she goes, I hear, are you sick? And I go, oh yeah. God. So now we got to go back down the trail.
You smell like shit.
Not only do I smell like shit, we have to go back down the trail, and then, and we have to go through the minefield. So she now sees the shit that I was kicking down. I'm like, hey, look up here. Is that a kite? Oh, look, an eagle. An eagle. I'm fucking saying it. I'm lying about birds in the air. And I fucking had to blow it out. Now.
How bad did you smell?
How bad did I smell?
Hopefully you didn't have back
track. I had to take a sink shit shower at the fucking bathroom down there. I'm trying to get my ass. You ever try to get your ass in a sink? One of those old-fashioned sinks? You can't do it.
And was I'm it a wet. Public bathroom?
Of course it was
how
a public bathroom.
How many people could get in there? Was it one that you could
knock
yourself?
No, thank God in Topanga Canyon, there are individual ones.
Legs
I wouldn't have cared. I would have. that shit was coming off my ass no matter what, dude. I don't care. So now I sink clean my crack. We're sitting in the car, and I have to drive her from Topanga Canyon all the way up to Gower in Los Feliz. I'm like, anyway, that was fun. Just call me the poo-poo guy. No laughter.
Never nothing. Talked to her again, did you?
Saw her in a. She saw me in a coffee shop a year later and ran the fuck out.
Wow.
She was like, she never returned my phone call. I called her twice. She was like, fuck that. You're the shit guy. You're disgusting.
Oh, my God.
You can't have explosive diarrhea and get laid. You got to just write that one off, dude. That ain't going to happen.
Wow.
Explosive. But here's the reality. If it was her, you would still fuck her.
Of course I would.
With the shit on.
Take a shower. You don't even have to take a shower. Just wipe well. Fuck it. I'm horny.
Use the shit as lubrication.
Whatever. You got a towel? Fuck it.
You got a fucking clothespin?
I'm not a pussy.
I'll put a clothespin in my nose and
kill that
shit.
You got herpes? Oh, fuck it. I'll wear a condom. Roll the dice.
You got basil.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Fleshlight.
Thank you very much for tuning in again. Thank you, everybody from Boston. We had a fucking awesome time. And that was, the craziest round of applause I've ever gotten ever at a comedy club from the Wilbur Theater. That was, it was cool to be home, growing up in Boston and then doing that show there was a lot of fun. The UFC there was a lot of fun, too. Bunch of fucking psychos in the audience. Thank you very much to the Fleshlight for sponsoring our show. Thank you very much, Brian Callen. What is your Twitter? Just Bryan.
Callen.
Brian Callen. That's his Twitter.
Yeah, man. Hey, if you guys are up north, I'm going to be up in San Jose September 23rd to the 26th. Up at the Rooster Tea Feathers. So come out, man.
Is that a comedy club?
Yeah.
Where's
that? Rooster
Tea
Feathers. It's in San Jose.
San Jose. Rooster Tea Feathers. And what is the dates again?
It's September 23rd and the 26th. And to the 26th.
Their information is at briancallen.com.
Yeah. And then I'll be in Louisville, Kentucky, October 7th to the 11th.
And that's Bryan.com.
Not the cool
Bryancallen.com.
Yeah.
Bryancallen.
Not the cool way to spell it.
Brian spells it the cool way.
Yeah.
With an I.
With an I, like a man.
Well, he's Scottish. Not into himself, man. He's a yes man. He's into yes. He's into positivity.
That's right. So he goes that's the yes. Scottish way of saying.
We had a fun time, as always. Thank you very much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. Tomorrow, we will have another podcast, this time 2 p.m., and, of course, iTunes will be on the next day, and it'll be Joey Diaz and Eddie Bravo, and we're going to break down UFC 118 and have a good time. So thank you very much for coming in. I really appreciate coming in. Where'd you go? Tuning in.
Tuning in.
Whatever you're doing.
Locking in.
Whatever we're doing here. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Love you guys. Bye.